Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 95 of the award-wanting podcast, Skip to the End. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm going to win an award, hopefully, in a few months' time.
Well, I hope so. I hope so, Mark. And to that end, the competition is still open. You can still vote for us in the British Podcast Awards by going to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. The vote is open until May the 17th, so get on it. Vote, vote, vote.
Vote, 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 vote.
And that's all there is for this episode. It's been a good one.
See you in 2 weeks.
What have we got coming up, Gemma?
Well, our top three this time around is going to be our top three redemptions. So we're going to be talking about the characters that deserve a bit of redemption, a bit of salvation after the wrongdoings they've done in the past. It's going to be very interesting to hear your choices.
Our rewatch this time is the 80s classic, not the new one, the original Ghostbusters.
Oh yes. You feel a bit excited. Ooh. And then if that wasn't enough, our main review is the long-awaited Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah. There's too much in this episode already.
That little film there.
Well, we've got round three, the final round of our incredibly, ridiculously successful quiz show that is a homage, can I add?
Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind. So it's Ben versus Mark. Mark versus Ben. Who's going to win? Who's going to win out of all of us three?
The originators, the creators, Mark and Ben.
Gosh.
From mastermind to masturbate, on this episode, we've got Julianne Moore to come over. So that's going to be a really good, thrilling masturbate for us all.
Not happy with that.
Already.
Disgusting.
Oh, my Lord.
And, of course, we'll have all the usual tasty hotness that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. And normally, this is the point where we'll just shoot the shit for 10 minutes. I don't want to. I want to get straight into it because we've got Ghostbusters and Avengers. Let's get started.
Our top three this time around is our top three redemptions. I've already done the introduction in the introduction itself, so I want to get juiced up and I want to get stuck in. How about you guys? Is that all right with you?
I'm already juiced.
Then in that case, Ben, tell me your first one, please.
Right, I'm going to keep this brief because you're sick to death of me talking about this, I am sure. But it has to be Rutger Hauer as Roy Batty in Blade Runner. Do one.
Who are these from what film? What?
As I say, I will keep it brief. You know, Batty starts out as this murderous replicant who's hell-bent on killing Rick Deckard. But when he realises he's about to expire, he saves Deckard's life as he hangs off the edge of the Bradbury building. There are many interpretations as to why he does this. Why has he switched? Why has he performed this face turn? The particular interpretation that I go along with is because he wanted Deckard to see that even though he wasn't human, he still had humanity. That's what it's all about for me, so I love that turn. What I want to do now, though, is I just want to focus on one thing that I don't think I've ever focused on before with regards to this performance. On that same scene, he saves Deckard, he then gives his final soliloquy, the famous Tears in Rain speech. And it's the opening line of that speech when he says, "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe." And the key thing I want to point out here is the pause. "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe." It's that pause that I truly believe is my favourite piece of acting in the history of the medium. Because in that pause, in that 1 second, that beat, you see him, you feel him recollecting all these things that he's seen. In that small moment, in that small pause, you feel the whole weight of his experiences. And it's a masterclass of acting from Rutger Hauer.
I don't want to do any choices. I think that's the best thing I've ever heard.
That's annoying because my next topic is going to be top three pauses in cinema history. So you've just completely shit all over that. So yeah, great one.
That's an amazing explanation. I'm literally bowled over right now.
Aren't you getting back into the whole Blade Runner franchise again now because of seeing it? You've kind of read and looked into the whole world of it.
Well, this is it. So one of our listeners a few weeks back, as one of their recommendations, they mentioned a book called Future Noir about the making of the film. film. And I've been reading that, and it's absolutely fantastic. It's massive. It is a tome of a book, and it's worth a read. And because of that, I've been getting sucked in. We, of course, went to the Secret Cinema Blade Runner event as well. So recently, I've purchased 4K versions of Blade Runner The Final Cut, Blade Runner 2049. I've also managed to get hold of a copy of the original Blade Runner theatrical cut that has the terrible Harrison Ford, you know, narration over it. I've also got hold of a documentary called Dangerous Days, a 3-hour documentary about the making of the film. For a film that I was already obsessed over, I've gone over the edge. I think
we've done well to get him here for recording, to be honest.
High five to that.
I've never seen the original cut with the voiceover.
Yeah,
never.
It's not great. I mean, compared to the final cut, it sucks. But as an artifact, as the thing that came out at the time, it's worth seeing, especially now because I'm reading about the making of the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
I want to see it to be able to compare and contrast the two.
Oh, I completely did fall absolutely head over heels with it at Secret Cinema. It will make my top five, I think, in August when we do our 4-year anniversary, which is scary.
I know.
I love the resurgence. It was just an incredible evening, and I really want to go and just watch it now.
Should we just spend the next 2 hours talking about Blade Runner?
Let's do it.
That would work for me.
Blade Runner cast. Mark, your choice, please.
They say go big or go home, and I don't think there's a bigger character than this, literally. John Coffey in Green Mile.
John Coffey back on.
John Coffey's back.
Hello, lad.
Again, you would believe that after 95 episodes we have discussed him before. We haven't ever done it as a rewatch, which I think
we
should at some point. But he's a murderer of two girls. He gets brought onto the Green Mile, and all we know at this point is that he's guilty. We know nothing else about him. His first ever introduction is this massive beast. He's huge. He must be about 7 foot
minimum.
Minimum. Absolutely massive. 7 foot minimum is what it says on his IMDb. But he's one big fucker. And he looks...
It also says that on his IMDb.
Yes. Yeah. And he looks like a threat. He looks horrible. He looks scary. He's got all these torn dungarees on. Just looks... Just harrowing. Then we kind of start getting some sort of slight hints that he isn't probably that bad because he's scared of the dark and he wants, you know, some of the people on the ward to leave the lights on at night. And you start thinking, this ain't someone who's killed in cold blood two young innocent girls. This isn't right. And then you start seeing him taking these kind of things on board. So he helps one of them with a urine infection. You know, he takes the pain, takes the pain back, boss.
Lad.
He heals one of the wives, you know, the wardens. They go out to his house, they have to hide him, and he takes this like major pain away and cures her. And then we also see him bring Mr. Jingles back to life, which is a small mouse. And you start thinking, this isn't a killer. And then we got the whole story of how he was wrongly framed. He was trying to help the girls. It was someone else that killed them. And you are then seeing this redemption of this guy's gone from this horrible heel to probably the biggest face in the industry. Like, he is the ultimate John Cena. He really is. You just absolutely love the character. You love how he's helping everyone. You feel sorry for him. And the film is absolutely heartbreaking because I remember seeing it in the cinema for the first time with my mum and dad. And I did cry. I sat there and cried my eyes out. I must have been probably 10 or 11.
32.
Yeah. It would. I wouldn't be embarrassed to still cry at this film because we see the end of him. He doesn't want to be alive anymore. And I can kind of relate to that at times when there's so many of us in this world. not a suicidal task.
Wow.
Shall we just be quiet and let him say what he needs to say?
Skip to the end of Mark's life. But
take the
you can
away.
See how he hates people, and there's just other people in the world who just make him realise that life isn't all that good. And you think, do you know what? He's got a point. Mm. And he goes out and just... It's horrible. His death is tragic, and the place is never the same again.
Oh, he's a poor baby lamb.
See, I'm not saying that your pick is wrong. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But if he was innocent to begin with, is it a face turn? If he was good at the start anyway?
I think
it's
so.
Not really, because what's he been redeemed if he's...
Because he came in as the bad guy. He was brought in as the character was the bad guy. So I was sold.
He was
this
accused.
Is the bad
fair
guy.
Right.
By the end of the film, he turns into his redemption.
That's fair. That's
so, yeah.
And all the guards were crying, weren't they?
Oh, it's tragic. As and all the characters are great in that film. Every single one. Sam Rockwell. Amazing.
Oh, man. Unreal.
Yeah. Well, funny you should say Sam Rockwell.
Ooh.
See? Segway. My first choice is Dixon from Three Billboards Across Ebbing, Missouri.
Great show.
Nice and fresh.
Of course, we did review this at the start of the year, and as it stands, it's one of my favourite films of this year. So Dixon is played by Sam Rockwell, who's pretty good. And when we're first introduced to him, he's just vile. He's this racist, homophobic, just has a problem with everybody and a real chip on his shoulder. He's kind of like this little boy who's found himself in the position of power as being a police officer. And the peak of his disgrace is when he assaults Red and his lady friend in that advertising office. He just chucks him out the window, beats him up, and he doesn't give a shit. He's a horrible, horrible person. But of course, those who haven't seen it, I'm going to just reveal a big spoiler. Chief Willoughby, His mentor, played by Woody Harrelson, kills himself because of cancer. And this affects him in a really big way when he finds out. And Chief Willoughby leaves him a letter to try and sort of shake him, just to say, look, mate, you can do good in the world. You don't have to go through this life with anger in you. And from there, we just see this turn in the character that what he's done, this life that he's led, was wrong. And he wants to help. And he helps Mildred try and get this guy who may be the killer of her daughter by sacrificing himself and getting beaten up just to get a bit of DNA. The change is remarkable, and it really does pang my heartstrings when I do watch this turn, when I think about it too. And it was so deserved that the Oscar was awarded to Rockwell on that night. It's the turn to a more redeemable and worthwhile life, that now he's still got a bit of that vengeance, still got a bit of that anger, but he's going to use it for good and help Mildred get the bastard who killed her daughter.
It is great, and the important thing to recognise, though, is even though he does have this turn and he does do good things towards the end, the film never suggests that we're supposed to forgive him for the fact that he was an arsehole.
Yeah.
He's not all of a sudden not a racist prick cop. He still is that, but at least he's trying. I think the film recognises that.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of bad press about the film because they thought it was trying to say, okay, he's not a bad guy anymore. We can forgive the racism, the old racism. We're not going to worry about that now. But that, I don't think that is what the film was trying to do. I think what the film was saying is, even within the worst people, there is a sliver of good.
Absolutely.
God, that reminds me of being at school, what my headmaster used to say to my mum and dad on parents' evening.
Right, no joke. My old religious studies teacher once, Mrs. Entwistle, I'm naming and shaming you, you cow.
Mrs. Entwistle.
Entwistle, she said to my mum about me, sometimes don't you just want to slap him? True story.
Oh my giddy ass. What a cow.
Yup. I mean, to be fair, I was a prick.
Yeah. That's the thing I can't argue with. My parents still remind me of horrendous parents' evening. They're embarrassed, you know. Oh, we got kicked out 7 times during the week and blah, 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 blah. You can't argue. You just got to put your hands up and, like, you know, you got me. There's no, the teacher's a bitch. Because if it happens 3 or 4 times, you can't... There's a trend
that you
can't fight.
Yeah.
I'm just a problem child.
Yeah, I was an angel.
Oh, yeah, right.
Come on. Right, so we go around again. Ben.
I'm going to give you a fun one.
Yay.
And it's Danny McBride as Red in Pineapple Express.
Oh, nice.
So in the film, Red is this duplicitous and seemingly immortal drug dealer who repeatedly fucks over Dale and Saul, played by Seth Rogen and James Franco. At first, he rats them out to this mobster, Ted, but then he eventually becomes their saviour after he arrives unexpectedly and ploughs his car in their captor to rescue them. The amazing part is that he does all this. He does this rescue after getting shot twice in the gut midway through the film.
Relatable.
Yeah, the henchmen shoot him in the gut and you think he's dead, but he somehow manages to survive and plods on. And then when he arrives to save Dale and Saul, he then gets shot again, gets mowed down with a machine gun, but he still survives. And then the film culminates with Red, Dale and Saul in a diner talking about their experiences and expressing how much they love each other as friends and brothers. And he's sat there just bleeding to death from multiple gunshot wounds, but he's enjoying his eggs too much to go to the hospital. And at one point he actually passes out and they think he's dead, and he wasn't, he was just having a bit of a nap. And it's just such a delightful performance from this guy who comes across as an absolute dickhole to begin with, but is the saviour by the end of it all. Such a fun film.
I love Danny McBride.
I love the film as well, and people always say it's not that great. If you ever talk to people, everyone's like, oh, Superbad's great, but I don't like that one about the stoners. And I think it's a great
film.
It's
hilarious.
I have residual great memories of this film, because the first time I went to see it at the cinema, my friend and I, who I went with, we snuck in brandy.
And
we were drinking brandy and Coke in the cinema, so we were half cut, and we came out going, it's the funniest film ever made. And clearly that's not true, but because of that, I still have residual good feelings. I really, really love this film.
What brand of brandy would it be if you were to have any?
That would be Remy Martin.
Ooh.
It wasn't, but if they want to send us some.
It was bloody Spa's own, £6. It's a great film, and I think that's when Franco, you could see, was just having the time of his life as well. They are stoned on set.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
There's no way that you can tell me that Seth Rogen isn't there rolling up for them the whole way on production.
Yeah.
All in the eyes.
Yeah.
Anytime McBride, Franco and Rogen are together, you know they're high as fuck and having fun. And that comes out across on the screen. Like, what's that film that's basically a home movie? This is the end. Yeah, see, I don't like that because it's just a home movie. But you can see they're clearly having fun too much, which is why it's not a good film. But I love the fact they're clearly just good friends who are loving life.
Yeah.
And you know, Danny McBride, bless him, he's not got the greatest of range. Like, in this film, he's the typical brash, oversized McBride that he always is. But I just fucking love him. I would watch him in anything. I'd watch him take a shit.
Yeah.
I'd give that 10 out of 10.
Kanye!
I want more Kenny Powers. I want a new season. I know we're probably not going to get it. He's busy doing Halloween, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
but I would like more Kenny Powers.
Oh, I need to rewatch Eastbound and Down. It's been too long.
It's so good. Round again, and it's crazy how quick this is going. So my next one is Groundhog Day, Phil Connors.
Excellent. Wonderful choice.
An absolute awesome film. My dad's favourite film of all time as well, which is, we've talked about in the past when we went to New York and got to see the musical, but this film, I believe, is the greatest ever for kind of showing redemption, and it's done so well. People talk about all these Christmas films, like It's a Wonderful Life and all this. I'm like, no, if you want to see it done properly, you give it to Phil Connors, because if you give it to Bill Murray, you're going to get results.
Yep.
The message in this is basically that a bad guy can turn good. He sees and gets a chance to reenact the same day over and over again to learn and see the problems he's done. And then when he actually realizes it's himself, he gets the good life where he gets to wake up and the day's changed. But we get to see him learn how to, well, it's dark. He commits suicide in this film about several times, which is absolutely mental. We see him ice sculpt all to try and get the attention of the girls. We get him to see saving people's lives from a kid falling out of a tree. He learns to play the piano.
Yeah.
He takes advantage of learning all these amazing skills just to impress the girl and get her. And Rita in this film is Andy McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A beautiful actress, an absolutely astonishing performance. And again, someone we haven't seen on screen for a very long time. She just does hair adverts now for shampoo and stuff.
Yes,
we just
right.
don't
yeah.
see much of her on the big screen. But I believe she is coming into a film in the next few months, which is going to be quite big.
Oh, yeah, with Chris O'Dowd.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful news.
So she's probably listened thinking, you know, this is my chance. I think we might have mentioned on Skip to End before and thought, I need to come back. So if
this she'd have heard this.
It's
yeah.
definitely.
And if you are...
Bastard, yes.
But this film is hilarious. It really is Bill Murray. In my own honest opinion, his best ever performance.
Oh, well, we are about to review Ghostbusters.
Hello.
And he's just so likable, even as the bad guy. But there's so many good lines as well. Every time he keeps meeting, he's like, Phil Connors, is that you? Ned Ryerson? Again, it's just, even that film shouldn't work. The same day repeating should get a bit boring and monotonous. Yeah. It doesn't. It fucking works.
It's true. And like that, the bit where he meets Ned, even something like him putting his foot in the puddle each time is never not funny.
It's great.
It works perfectly.
Everything about it is just funny. It is quite sad at times, but
oh,
you kind
massively.
Of make sure to look at your own life and think, I want to try and improve myself, but then not bother and watch Netflix.
You're right when you say it's sad, because Bill Murray's got a bit of that thing that William H. Macy's got of being that kind of hangdog, sad sack
Aww.
Kind of person, and he
yeah.
plays that beautifully.
I just want to give him a cuddle.
I'd love to. There's one guy I'd love to meet.
Me too.
Oh, me too.
And have a nice cold glass of, which drink would we choose now? We've done some brandy.
Kvossier. That's more brandy.
Vodka, Smirnoff.
Suntory time.
Good luck getting him on Mark and Me, though, pal, because he doesn't have an agent. He
no,
just has an answer machine that people ring, and he calls them back if he chooses to.
I'll find that number,
good
and
luck.
I will ring it.
I like the light-hearted feel, so I'm going to go for one too. My next pick is Jason Nesmith from Galaxy Quest.
Oh, unreal. Lovely film.
Yep, starring Tim Allen, the star of an intergalactic TV show from 18 years ago, who suddenly finds himself the only hope for the rest of the galaxy. And what I love about this character, it's all about the character development that Nesmith goes through, and it's surprisingly touching. So when we're first introduced to him, he's this brash kind of know-it-all. He knows he's the star. He can turn up whenever the hell he wants to, because it's all about him. He has no consideration for any of his co-stars, any of his family. He doesn't care at all. He's just happy the fact that this big fan base puts him on a pedestal and make him feel like he's the only man in the world. However, as I said, everybody hates him. And he starts to regenerate his feelings when he's picked up by this extraterrestrial spaceship and reveals that these aliens think that Galaxy Quest, the TV show, is documentary. They think it's a real thing. He thinks they all think yeah. that he is the main guy to save everybody. So he tries to get all the old cast on board, convince them that they need to play along with this whole deal and save the universe. And as the story goes on, he realizes that it's not all about him. He realizes that he needs the help of everybody. He needs that camaraderie. It's not all about him anymore. And it's a wonderful thing, even seeing him fall in love with Sigourney Weaver's character, Tawny. For real, it's not all about her thinking, oh, he's a complete asshole.
Mm-hmm.
He finally shows her that he is a good person inside and out. It's just the resilience of this man that Tim Allen plays is just wonderful. It really is great. And by the end of it, he also acknowledges the help that Justin Long's character and his nerdy mates, that he needs them too. He realizes the whole thing about them helping out the whole universe is wonderful. It's just a really great film. It's so funny. It's so touching. Alan Rickman too.
Oh,
yeah.
Nearly made my list. But he no longer places himself as center of the universe. He knows that friendship is the best team to be on.
Big time. It is a great film. I love that there's a very young Rainn Wilson in it as well as one
of
the aliens.
He's one of the aliens with the big bulk up.
Baby Dwight.
Baby Dwight.
It is a great film. And a lot of Star Trek fans out in the world class it as one of the best Star Trek films ever made, even though it is not a Star Trek film.
Yeah.
It is an excellent film. And there's talk at the minute, I think, of either doing a sequel or a TV version, which I'm kind of tentative about.
Not sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things that works beautifully as an artifact, as its own thing. You don't necessarily want to tarnish it by doing an inferior version.
Yeah. It's also the third film that we've mentioned that Sam Rockwell's in it.
Oh, shit.
It's Sam Cast.
Yeah.
It really is.
I haven't seen that film for years, you know, absolutely years.
Beautiful.
I was flicking around the TV channels maybe 6 weeks ago and it just happened to be on. I got into it just as it was starting. And it's one of those where you kind of forget how great it is.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, I'll just leave this on in the background. And before you know it, you're fully focused and bloody loving it.
Yeah.
And isn't Sigourney Weaver in it?
She
as
is.
Gemma said in her
yeah.
thing.
I'm a half
try, try listening. Try listening. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's not a one-man show, this. Try listening.
Well, I'm going to switch on this listening button here and maybe we'll get a bit more input in the rest of the episode from me. Let's go.
There we
Come
go.
On, let's listen to what Ben has to say.
I'm going to finish it off with the character of Ben Wade, played by Russell Crowe in 310 to Yuma.
Wowzers. Oh.
Another magnificent film. Crowe plays Wade, who's a ruthless leader of a band of murderous outlaws. And Dan Evans is played by Christian Bale, and he's tasked with getting him onto the 310 train to Yuma prison. And then Wade's gang, led by the sociopathic Charlie Prince, played by an amazing Ben Foster, then tries to rescue Wade and kill Evans. The face turn comes towards the end of the film when Wade realises that Evans isn't transporting him to the prison out of a sense of justice, or really even for the cash that he's being given. It's because he wants to do something good that his sons can remember him and respect him for. And Wade then has this new sense of respect for Evans and agrees to go to Yuma peacefully. Basically, he says, I've already escaped from Yuma twice, so it's fine. I'll go along. You can have this story for your kids. I'll just escape anyway. But his co-leader of his band, Prince, he has other ideas. So he turns up and he shoots Evans, even though Wade tells him, don't do that. You don't. There's no need to do it. At that point, this is when he goes full on face. He just snaps and he just kills Prince and kills all the other members of his outlaws. And then he just calmly puts down his weapons and gets on the train. And that's out of the respect that he had for Evans and what he was doing as a man and as a parent and as a husband.
I don't know what to say.
And what have you done
yes.
lately?
What have you done?
Fucking hell.
It's so beautiful. It's a powerful ending to an amazing film. It's kind of predictable. You know, really, that he's going to go that way. But that doesn't make it any less powerful or any less enjoyable. And it's a great character piece between Crowe and Bale. They're magnificent all the way through the film. But Foster steals it as Prince. And you can't help but be delighted when he gets killed at the end because he's such an almighty prick. When was the last time either of you saw this film?
A very, very, very
so long
time
long.
Ago.
I've seen it once and that's it.
Yeah,
It's one of those underrated classics. And it's directed by James Mangold, who directed Logan.
Yeah.
So get the fuck on board because it's... Honestly, people need to be singing this from the rooftops more because it's such a great movie.
Foster's one of my kind of underrated actors of all time in a weird way.
Yeah.
He's always
great.
Delivered, but people don't talk about him enough. He's not in enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember how much we loved him in Hell or High Water?
Absolutely outstanding. And he goes against the big weights. Like, look at people like you were there saying Russell Crowe, one of the best actors in the business.
Bale,
the best.
Yeah.
And he's still delivering.
Jeff Bridges. Yeah.
Oh,
he never looks out of depth.
I think the reason why he's not as big as he should be is because he doesn't go for the leading man roles.
Yeah.
He's a handsome fella and could easily be an A-lister leading man, but he's a character actor.
Yeah.
He likes those meaty roles where he can get his teeth into different types of characters, which are usually left for the kind of older, uglier actors, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's why he's not an A-list name. But he's definitely an A-list talent.
Exactly what Corey Feldman does.
Big time, exactly that. I mean, we've all seen Lost Boys 5.
Yes. He doesn't want to be the A-list or the main.
No.
He chooses to do the small
parts.
Yeah,
which works out well because he isn't. It's perfect for him, really.
Like Corbin Nash, he doesn't want to be the main guy.
Corbin Nash available now, so
yeah, on streaming services. Supposed to be his finest work since House of Murder Mass 5.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. My last choice is quite a dark, very, very nasty guy. Clint Eastwood playing the horrible Walt in Gran Torino.
Love this film.
Good, because a lot of people don't like this film. Whenever you talk about his back cut and his really good meaty roles, everyone talks about the classics, but I think this is a great film. He directed it as well and starred in it, and I don't see the problem with this film. He's this old, cynical, horrible man that's distraught by images of like the Korean War. He's like a 90-year-old in like a 70-year-old man's body. He's that guy you see sitting on a porch just being horrible and pointing at kids and
get off my lawn type thing.
Yeah, exactly. He's just a nasty old man. He hasn't let this racism go. He has this hatred for his neighbours that live by him, which are a Korean family. So of course he's not going to like them because he has these bad images of Korean people from the war. It doesn't matter what colour you are, or what background, if your race isn't his, he doesn't like you. He's just a nasty man. He doesn't like interacting with people at all. He redeems himself in probably the ultimate way. He sacrifices himself for the child that he's made friends with to basically protect that whole family from this horrible mob, this gang that are terrorizing the neighborhood. You see the redemption quite slow in this film. It's a good two-hour epic film for me, and you start seeing little things. So he gets invited over for some food because he did some thing to help the family, and they make him way too much food, and I don't want to be here, why are you giving me this stupid food? And you start seeing him warming towards it. What's this food? It's a shit. And then you start liking it. He does.
Got a fussy bugger,
he does. He's like, it's really, I don't want it. And he, that sounded quite good. But you see him start warming towards it. He helps the kid, you know, fix the car. He starts really kind of warming to this family. The daughter gets raped by this gang, which is really hard to see. It's awful viewing. And the fact that he then takes it on himself to basically let himself go. I think he's kind of setting himself free because there's hints that he's got some sort of real internal, probably cancer. He's coughing up blood quite a lot.
Right, yeah.
And have you seen the film?
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. You know, if Clint's not playing a cowboy, I'm not interested.
Yes. You start seeing these signs of him coughing up and he's looking at the blood. So you think maybe his time's up anyway. So he is redeeming himself and being the ultimate hero, but he probably wouldn't have had that long anyway. But to see himself at the end, I'll ruin it for you then, Ben.
That's fine.
Mob come to the house. They're about to have a shootout and he basically goes out there, goes to shoot the mob, and they all shoot him instead of the family.
He dies,
the police arrive, they take him away, and the family are safe. So he's given up his own life for this whole Korean family, which is something you'd never expect at the start when he's calling them all fish heads and stuff, which is awful. So that's the sort of terms he uses. So it just shows just how evil he is.
It's horrible.
But a great film. Everyone slagged it off. I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with it. Maybe it's Clint Eastwood, when he was going, I think in the background he was going off on one, doing the whole politics and talking
to an empty chair.
I suppose it's kind of tricky if in the real world you're a bit of a right wing nut job, and then you're playing a right wing nut job in a film. It's a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. Hopefully he was just a method actor that was taking the role on for many years and never let it go. But a great film. I'm sorry I ruined the ending.
No, it's fine. I do want to. It's a film that's been on my list for ages, but it's always been so low down I've just never got round to it.
Yeah.
And by the time I do get round to it, I'll have forgotten what you said.
Good. It's fine. So I'll start bringing a pen like the Men in Black to this episode so we can just blank each other. That sound good?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Final one then, Jem.
Final one. And I'm going to end it on a light note. And I'm going to say these words. She doesn't even go to school! It's Regina George, Mean Girls.
Oh, excellent. Nice.
So directed by Mark Waters, and it follows a group of popular girls known as the Plastics. And Rachel McAdams plays Regina George, the queen bee of said girl gang. And right from the get-go, we understand that she's pretty much a nasty piece of work. Everybody's pretty much scared of her. One girl said that one time she punched her in the face and it was awesome. Violence is not awesome. But she enters the screen to the thunderous bass line of Missy Elliott's Pass the Dutch in slow motion, carried by a group of lads. And we get a feeling that this girl pretty much thinks very highly of herself. And she delivers such passive-aggressive put-downs. She's intimidating and she changes everybody's behaviour just so that way they can modify it to her needs and benefits. When towards the end of the film, we kind of get the sense that she's been exposed. Everybody realises just how much of a nasty piece of work this girl is. And so we see Katie, played by Lindsay Lohan, chase, you know, sort of go across the road and chase her to try and explain to herself, look, you know, it's going to be okay. But bang, she gets hit by a bus. Real life, eh?
I never saw that coming, I'll be honest. That was one of those moments of, what?
Neither did Regina.
No.
But the accident kind of changes her perspective on how she's been and what her life has been. She decides that, you know what, it's not all about being a bitch. Sometimes I do have to consider others. Even with the neck brace, we start seeing a bit of a change in her development. She realises that it's not all about being popular. It's about being who you are, being true to yourself and having bloody good friends and a bloody good family unit, even if the mother does have fake tits, because she does.
Tremendous.
Yeah, it's all about the titties.
Oh, hi, Gemma.
I'm trying to not have any comment or input on this. Carry on.
It's all right. I've got them. I can say it. But she finds...
What? Fake tits? Have you? Yeah.
Should have said
real. How much did they cost?
Yeah, the wedding's on delay right now. Greg's paying for them.
But she finds peace by joining a lacrosse team. They're no longer the plastics and she's just a normal kid.
She's plastic.
Yes.
It's great. It's a great film.
I love that film.
It's wonderful.
Is it on Wednesdays we wear pink?
Wednesdays we always wear pink.
Yes.
Have you seen that within the last few weeks, Tina Fey has launched a Broadway musical of Mean Girls?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it.
Apparently it's going down pretty well. People are enjoying it.
Hmm.
But I just like the film so much. Yeah. I'm quite happy just to
leave
it
at that.
It
is very good. I love the humour. I love the kind of miss scenes where they'll just suddenly have like lions all attacking each other. The sound effects of all of them like... In, I think it's in a mall, they're all attacking each other. And the sounds and everything, it's just so random, but it just works. It's very well made.
Yeah. It's a delightful film. Yeah. It's one of those that back in the day, I used to think it was a guilty pleasure and I didn't like telling people that I loved it, but now I don't give a fuck.
No,
I love that film.
Yeah.
It's
got the steelbook. It's great.
You go, Glen Coco.
Oh, that could be a rewatch one day.
I think it might
definitely
be.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm spent.
That was a lot of fun.
It was, but shall we hear what social media had to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right then. So we're going to go to Twitter first. So Mossbird at Mossbird said, Charlie Babbitt from Rain Man.
Oh yeah. Nice. Yeah, good one.
Agrees with you, Mark. Walt Kowalski from Gran Torino.
Oh, yeah.
That was too Macho Man. I meant, oh, yeah.
No, I don't know what that was.
I can't do it. I'll give up on the old impressions.
Don't ever give up on the old impressions. And then finally, Darth Vader.
Oh.
Classic. I purposely avoided that one. It's too obvious.
Then we're going to go to Duman at I Am Duman said Edward Norton from American History X.
Yes.
That is incredible.
I think that was quite popular on social media.
Very much so. Christian Bale from Equilibrium.
Yes.
I've seen that film in years.
God, I love that film. That's another one that got slated by the reviewers. Said it was derivative of a lot of things, but it's very good.
It was your favourite Bale performance.
Yeah.
Wasn't it so close to The Matrix at the time, few years, and everyone's like, oh, it's the same, he's got a black coat on.
It's similar to Matrix, it's similar to 1984, and Fahrenheit 451 as well. There's a lot of obvious influences.
Mm-hmm. And the third choice was Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino. Very popular choice. I want you to watch this at IWYTWT said Nebula from Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Absolutely, ooh, yeah.
Anna Mine from Boy. I'm not familiar with Boy, I'll be honest.
I've not seen that film.
No,
me either.
No, but, well, must be redeemable. And Deckard Shaw from Fate of the Furious.
Yep, probably.
Phil Morris at Rumar 1980 said Will Smith, £7. Shite movie, but one hell of a way to redeem yourself. You just popped himself in a bathtub with a jellyfish.
It's too shite to watch. Yeah, I can't be doing with
agreed
it.
Agreed.
Never mind. Matt Damon from Good Will Hunting.
Amazing choice.
Indeed.
And Mickey Rourke from The Wrestler.
Oh, yes!
I thought one of you guys would have had that in your list.
No, I didn't. Shit. It didn't even cross my mind. It may well have made my list if I thought of it.
I'm gonna
you
cry.
Just made the list.
Then to Facebook, David Roper said, Ebenezer Scrooge, A Christmas Carol.
Classic,
It kind of is. Creasy from Man on Fire.
Oh, that's an amazing film.
Yeah, far better than it should have been, really.
Always makes me cry at the end. And Godzilla in Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah, he did realise.
And then finally, Instagram, Callum Brown at CBRO.22 agreed with you, Ben. Red from Pineapple Express.
Lovely.
Vickers from District 9.
Ah, Vickers van der Merwe.
Yeah.
You're a fucking prawn.
And then finally, Phil from Groundhog Day.
Yes. That's some awesome choices.
It's a great choice. So thanks, guys. Keep them coming. Whose topic is it next?
That would be me.
Ooh.
Our topic on our next episode is going to be our top three cult movies. Those movies that didn't necessarily do so well at the box office, but have lived on in the home video, DVD, Blu-ray market.
Come on!
Amazing.
The entire time I knew him, he only ever had one goal. To wipe out half the universe. If he gets all the Infinity Stones, he can do it with the snap of his fingers. Just like that.
We've been to see Avengers Infinity War. The Avengers return for their third collective adventure as the team are joined by the likes of the Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange and Black Panther to take on their most fearsome foe yet, the mad Titan Thanos. Thanos has come to our planet to gather the all-powerful Infinity Stones in an effort to wipe out half of humanity, and it's up to Earth's mightiest heroes to stop him. Marky Mark, so far this year you have said... the three billboards, I, Tonya, Annihilation and A Quiet Place are all the best film of the year. So, Avengers Infinity War, best film of the year?
It's a bloody strong contender for me. I'll have to hear the three of us discuss it in a bit more detail to make my final conclusion. But at the moment, it's knocking on the door.
Wow.
I had a absolute blast in the cinema. There's a few points that didn't work for me, and we'll come to that. Don't get me wrong. There's definitely a few niggling bits that I can't quite put down.
Yeah.
But I had a great experience. And for something that was such a huge scale that people could fuck up so badly, I think they got it right and it was handled perfectly.
Well put. Gemma, thoughts?
I need another week to recover, guys.
It's exhausting.
Because I was not ready for that. I am shook. It is a big, bold, operatic film that was so much fun. And boy, did the time fly by. I did not feel like it was the longest Marvel film ever.
2.5 hours flew by.
Amazing. And I was aware that Thanos was going to be this big, bad bastard that was going to come and completely ruin everything for everybody. But I was not prepared for that.
Yes, I mean, I echo everything you've said. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was beautifully made. My one concern, I would say, is that it's clearly half a film.
Yes.
Yeah. We only got half the story. So to that end, it's difficult to really judge it without knowing how it ends, effectively. So that's really my only major point. But yes, I thoroughly bloody enjoyed it. So let's get into it. Actually, one thing I should say is spoilers ahoy. There are going to be a lot of spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen this film yet and you care one iota about the MCU, you've got to skip to the end of this particular segment because we're going to ruin it for you. Shall we jump in and talk about the deaths?
Yes.
Because Thanos comes to Earth with the stated purpose of wiping out half of humanity. He's a guy, his whole purpose is that he doesn't want to kill everyone or dominate everyone. He believes that the universe, we should get rid of half the population to save the other half, because overpopulation is what's killing the whole universe, which is an odd motivation, which we'll discuss in a bit. But that leads to a lot of deaths. But let's talk about the first couple of deaths we see. What did you think to the on-screen deaths of Gamora?
Oh my god.
And, of course, Loki. Right at the start of the film, Loki.
So this is my problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so Loki's a character that I've loved for nearly 10 years in the universe.
Yeah.
I feel like they're part of the family. You've seen 11 or 12, maybe 13 films now of these characters that have built this whole universe.
This is the 19th, I think.
Wow.
Something like that.
Wow. I've missed a few, I think. And Loki's one of the characters I really kind of find myself attached to. I've always loved him. I've loved the performance he puts in. I just think he's amazing. To see him die so quickly and kind of be brushed under the carpet, so like, Loki's dead, right, next.
I was
left a bit frustrated in the fact that, do you know what, it's very predictable, that film at the start, because this is not a fault. We knew deaths were coming. I thought to myself, is it going to be Iron Man? Is it going to be Cap? Is it going to be Loki? But as soon as I saw Loki was kind of had this threat against him and he was helpless, I thought, right, this is the first. I've got my list of paper, tick Loki off.
Yeah.
And it was done, and it was just so quick to then move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't mentally kind of detach myself from that character anymore and think he's taken from my universe. It was just too quick.
Yes.
I was like, oh, man.
Very fast-paced. Didn't give you enough time to mourn. It just continued you to hurtle through the story because, of course, there's so much to cover. But yeah, you needed that time just to collect your breath and go, oh my God, he's gone.
Yeah, I think the script and the story and the directors have really let down both Loki and Gamora. And again, like we've all just said, there's so much story to get through and something insane like 30 lead characters that people are going to suffer. They're not going to get the screen time. But someone like Mark has expressed, someone as important to the universe as Loki, and I know Gamora's not necessarily as important, but she's established, she's been in a couple of films now, for them to just go to die and there'd be no kind of rumination on their deaths, no one crying over it or missing them. You know, there's some great work with Thor later on when Thor is, you know, Chris Hemsworth does brilliantly talking about all the people he's lost. But other than that, Loki dies, gone, no one cares anymore. Gamora dies, gone, we move on. It's overstuffed. I think the biggest complaint that people are saying about this film is that it's overstuffed, which means you don't have the downtime to relax and think and ruminate on these things. Everything's a climax. There's no build-up. It's just climax, which is breathtaking and fun and exhilarating, but it just means that things aren't given the time they deserve.
And that's why, for me, in Guardians 2, when we lost Rooker, what's his character?
Yondu.
Yondu. I felt emotion because it was a funeral. We saw the body low and we saw him and the flowers
fireworks.
And all the people and the fireworks, and it was a big send-off.
Yeah.
I know they can't do that for every death, but I felt like wanting to bore my eyes out. And that's the bad guy in the first film, of Guardians. So I'm saying, oh my God, to see someone like Loki, who's one of my favourite characters, just right, next. It was not handled right. But then I'm trying to fault someone that handled all these characters, and I said at the start, handled everything perfectly. How could you get everything right?
This is it. Unless you release a 5-hour film,
True.
How can you do it? If you've got to try and distill whatever it is, 18 films or whatever, into one climactic film, you can't give everyone the justice they deserve. So, you know, maybe they've done the best they possibly could have with the limitations they have.
I think so. I mean, when you put it like that, it does make sense, because we do get that long shot, that point of view of Gamora just lying lifeless down the mountain when she's been chucked off by Thanos. And it does kind of give you a little bit of respite. Even with Vision, I mean, Vision got the glory of having two deaths.
Yeah.
You know, he got the hero's death at the beginning, and then Thanos used the time stone and went, nah, let's just really fuck him over. And obviously we got a bit more of a violent, more disturbing death. And I mean, I was quite sort of rattled when I saw that, because he was no longer sort of this heroic person that sacrificed himself. He was brutally murdered.
Yeah.
But I don't really care for Vision.
And this is
that
my
might
point.
Be me. I've not had enough of it.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is my problem with the film. There was a lot of focus on Scarlet Witch and Vision, but I hate to say this, I didn't really care for them as a couple. And I should.
Yeah.
I should do, because Scarlet Witch is amazing. Elizabeth Olsen is incredible as a Scarlet Witch, but I didn't really have the attachment.
See, I kind of do, but I think that's because I've read the comics where they're a couple, so I have that kind of vestigial relationship to them, not just in the film. One of the most moving images, I thought, is when he did get killed for the second time.
Yes.
And the colour drained out of him. He was just this grey husk with a hole in his head. I thought,
devastating.
That was absolutely brutal.
It was.
We've talked around it then. Let's talk about Thanos, because usually the villains in these films are B or C characters at best. They pop up every now and again. I would venture to say that Thanos is in this film more than anyone else. He's the lead character in this film.
He really
is. Which I thought was extraordinary. What did we think to Thanos? And not just the characterisation, but also the CGI. What did we think?
I think myself, he's probably the best villain now from Marvel. He's a genuine threat. And I've always said, and we've reviewed a few Marvel films now, that they don't quite get the villain right.
Yep.
It's their point where they always drop the ball for me. DC actually do quite well, not in the most recent film, but they sometimes give you that threat of, God, that's a real baddie. I thought he was the perfect, genuine threat. He had emotion. You saw the human element of him where he could cry and be this. You kind of felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
But
and
for
that's
a weird
crazy,
reason, yeah.
But he was such an absolute beast. And I think Josh Brolin should probably be nominated for an Oscar.
Wow, big words.
And I know they wouldn't, but it's... Think of the performance he gave.
Yeah.
His voice, the whole CGI was flawless. And when I've seen pictures and posters, I didn't really buy into it. I thought it looked like Homer Simpson that was purple.
Yeah.
I didn't think it looked great. And people were slagging it off. The moment he came on the screen and walked, I thought, he looks as good as every other character I've ever seen in this created universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like when you hear the breaking glass when Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out. It was like that. It's like, oh my God, Thanos is here.
He's amazing.
Remember how purple he was when we first saw him at the end of Avengers?
Yes.
The first one. And I think the way how they have developed his overall look is astonishing. It really does capture that slight human element to it. And Josh Brolin, I think, was the perfect pick for Thanos. Really intimidating, however, this, like you said, this side of emotion that we really weren't expecting to see. And he had motivation.
Yes.
This is the one thing we've said about, especially with Michael Keaton's character in Spider-Man Homecoming. When there's a motivation, you almost have this purpose of why that villain is there.
Yeah.
If this wasn't a motivation enough, then I don't know what is real anymore. But Thanos, hands down, he is my favourite villain. A worthy, worthy recipient for that.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And going to that motivation thing. The reason why we've all just agreed then that we kind of felt sorry for him and we didn't understand why, it's because his motivations are believable. You know, he genuinely believes that overpopulation is a curse and he wants to end it. Because that's what happened on his home planet. His home planet of Titan went to shit and everyone died because they didn't cull this overpopulation. So he sees it as his duty to go out into the world and save half of it by killing half of it. And it's a lunatic idea, but you understand it. He's not just a madman who wants to kill everyone or rule everyone. You understand his motivations, and that's why you feel sorry for him. And when part of that means he has to kill his own adopted daughter, Gamora, and you see him cry, you see that single tear roll down his cheek, you can't help but be like, yeah, I get this dude.
Yeah.
I might not like him, I might not agree with him, but I get this dude. And then that plays into the CGI as well. The CGI and the motion capture are arguably the best I've ever seen. That was Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Every twitch of the eyebrow, every movement of the mouth was Josh Brolin behind this. And then you compare it to something like Steppenwolf in Justice League, which was fucking garbage.
Dog shit.
You know, they'd done that on Microsoft Paint in like 3 hours. It was shite. And this they've clearly laboured over for years. And at no point did I think he was any less than real. I wasn't looking at him thinking you're just a load of zeros and ones on a computer screen. You are real to me. You are the Mad Titan Thanos. I think the one thing I would say is because they've spent so much time on making Thanos right is that they spent less time making his minions look right.
Oh,
so his four kind of other adopted children who were out in the world, I don't think they looked particularly great. They were okay, but they didn't look good as him. And I think they didn't really have any character development either.
No.
They existed purely because there were so many Avengers that they needed other villains for them to fight all across the world, so they had to put these in the film just to give the other Avengers something to do. Yeah. But I don't think they had a lot to do.
No, they kind of look like the love child of like an orc and Voldemort from Harry Potter.
Yeah, I did like the little sidekick, his little mate. I thought he was like, he looked like some from Star Wars, so I thought he looked good.
The one who gets blown out of the ship by Tony.
I liked him.
Yeah, he was the best one of the four, yeah. Mm.
If Funko were listening, I'd like a pop of him if they made one, because he was good. But no, he generally looked like... Because we hadn't seen him. We hadn't seen him in anything.
Ebony Moore, that's his name.
There we go.
Yeah, I did quite like him, of the four. Yeah.
He was quite scary, wouldn't he? Just sort of flick of the wrist and then you'd be dead.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And the voice actor was great. He had a very creepy voice. Yeah. I dug him. Let's talk about some of the heroes, shall we? How do we think our heroes fared on this? Who got the most out of this on the goodies side?
Oh, for me, MVP was Tom Holland as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I bloody loved him. Real sort of well fleshed out, real depth to him. And we really enjoyed him in the first Spider-Man Homecoming debut that he was portrayed in. But one of the key scenes that really made me sort of confirm his acting chops was worth it was towards the end when we start seeing half of our heroes evaporate into dust.
Yeah.
And that scene when he's being held by Tony Stark, scared shitless because he doesn't want to die. I just thought, yeah, big, massive tick. Really, really enjoyable. And I'm so pleased he's in the MCU. Or is he? Are we going to see him again?
We'll talk about the ending in a bit. But for me, he is Spider-Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck Tobey Maguire and double fuck Andrew Garfield.
Oh, yes.
He is Spider-Man for me. He's the only one to ever do it right on screen now.
Yeah, round of applause for Tom Holland.
For me, the heroes, and they were my two favourite performers in the whole film, with Thor and Star-Lord.
Yes!
Absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen Thor so powerful, and so I'm just in my seat wanting to just cheer every time he's on the screen and be like, yes! He's the greatest character, and he's back with a vengeance, and he's such a... just an awesome guy. His hair looks cool. Mm-hmm. The scars look good. His eye's missing.
Yeah.
He just doesn't give a shit. And to see him kind of going up against Star-Lord, of kind of these quirky pair that are kind of trying to do one better than each other, I was wetting myself.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Absolutely. Like Batista as well. All of them.
Oh, yes, God,
Batista was so funny.
The writing of the comedy was absolutely spot on.
Yeah. Within all the darkness of the film, they managed to keep the innate humour of the Guardians, which I think worked beautifully. And you're right, Thor and Star-Lord were great together. But for me, Thor's the number one. Thor is always my number one. I love Chris Hemsworth. I love the character. I thought he was such a badass. When he turned up at the end with his new Warhammer.
Stormbreaker
just fucking people up. I loved it. But again, I mentioned earlier, that moving scene where he's on the ship with Rocket, who's now his little buddy. Those two together, get them a spin-off film.
Please do.
But he's talking to his little buddy about, you know, basically everyone he knows has died. All of his whole home planet has died. His friends, his loved ones, his mum, his dad, his brother, everyone's dead. And it was a really great, moving little bit of work from Chris Hemsworth. I think he did everything in this film. I thought he was spectacular. Second best for me, I would say, was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, definitely.
I thought he was excellent as Doctor Strange in this. You got to see a kind of a more confident side of him, the fact that he was used to his role as this protector now. And one of the things I loved in the film is, towards the end of the film, or it might have been the middle, God knows, because time just didn't exist to me. But there's a bit where he's kind of looking into the future and he's talking with Tony Stark. And he says that there's however million possibilities of how this could end. And Tony says to him, and how many do we win? And he says, one. And then that plays into the end game of the film when he gives away the Time Stone to Thanos. And Tony says to him, why have you done that? And he's like, you know, I had to. And then at the end, just as he's dissolving, he says something like, this is the way it had to be, or whatever. Yeah. And at first I was thinking, why would it have to be like that? And then I realised, oh yeah, shit, because he's seen the future. He knows that it only ends well one way. So he probably saw that all these people have to die first for them to eventually win. And that was beautifully and subtly played by Cumberbatch. I thought he was spectacular.
I honestly thought he wasn't going to be in the forefront in this film. Mm. I thought he was just going to be ushered back. But I'm so glad, because we really enjoyed Doctor Strange when it was out.
Yeah.
And he's proven himself to be a real worthy character in the MCU.
I was just happy. I'll be honest, the best bit of the moment for me was when the music changed and you could see that James Gunn had directed this bit. The introduction for the Guardians,
yes.
The music came in.
It got
the new feel. It was all very serious and dark and, oh my God, everyone's going to die. And it just for 10 minutes, it was a release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just felt like, I want Guardians 3
now. Yes.
Don't make me wait. And are we now going to be in a world where Gamora's gone? Are we?
Is
there any way to time travel and bring them back? I don't know.
See, this is the thing. You know, as anyone who's ever read a comic book knows, dead is not always dead. I think in this film, so at the very end of it, of course, Thanos manages to get all the Infinity Stones and he wipes out half the galaxy with a click of the finger. And a lot of our heroes dissolve into dust, including the likes of Spider-Man and Black Panther. Now, all those guys are clearly coming back. Marvel, forget about storytelling, let's think about money-making. Marvel is not going to wipe out Spider-Man and Black Panther.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange.
Spider-Man is one of the most famous and successful characters of all time, and Black Panther is just pissed all over the record books. They're not dead, they're coming back. But the people who died prior to that, Gamora and Loki, I think they're gone.
Yeah,
I think they're gone too.
I think they're gone. Which, again, as much as we didn't like Loki's death, he's had a good run.
Yeah.
Whereas Gamora's still new to the universe, and it's kind of a shame. I know they've got a couple of other women on the Guardian ship now. You've got Mantis and
Nebula.
And I think Nebula's going to be with them. So, you know, if they're being cynical and thinking, well, we've got our woman quota, we can live without Gamora, I think that's a shame. And it's a shame for Zoe Saldana, because I think she's done damn good work.
And that's painful for me as a woman to see, because I really like the strong, badass female characters. I loved Gamora. I do hope that we do see a little bit more of Nebula, because Karen Gillan, my God, she wasn't in it for much, but when we're first introduced to her and we see her sort of suspended in air, it's not until the camera turns and we see parts of her body is spliced up like a Damien Hirst piece. Incredible. But if it means we get more Nebula, then I'm happy with that. But I'm devastated Zoe Saldana is not going to be in it anymore.
But the thing is, her death kind of was necessary. It was necessary for Thanos to kill her, because she's the one that he has the most contact with and emotional connection to. So I get it from a storyline perspective, but it's a fucking shame.
It really is.
You're sitting there though saying that you're gutted because this female iconic character, the heroics there. You don't need to worry, because in the next film, Captain Marvel's going to come along and be your new favourite hero, and you're going to be there going, she's now my princess.
Yes.
And it's Brie Larson, who fucking rules.
Massively. Yes. And she's beautiful in real life, guys, isn't she?
Indeed,
we've
seen
her.
Yeah, when we met her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we worry about future films, thinking about the other women who are in this film, I was a bit annoyed how little Black Widow had to do.
Nothing. No, I agree with you completely. Really pissed me off.
Yeah, she turned up with a new do, shot a couple of fuckers, and that was it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was worried that if I'd gone for a wee during the film, I could have missed her whole performance.
Yes.
And that's pretty worrying, because she's a big part. We've seen her since Near the Star. Everyone loves her. Scarlett Johansson's an incredible actress. She's so, so good. She's going to get her own film eventually. Mm-hmm. We know this. So why just, I suppose, again, though, we've got to look at things like, we didn't get Ant-Man, so at least she got some screen time.
Or Hawkeye. At least
you know,
she was in it. Yeah.
So at least those 2 minutes we did get was better than nothing.
Yeah.
And maybe she comes back in the next film. She has a lot more
I
to
hope
do.
So. Mm-hmm. And apparently they're working on a script for a solo Black Widow film.
Good.
We've needed that for a long time.
Which brings me to my next point. Where was Valkyrie?
Yes, because she was announced in the cast list. She on IMDb up until the release day, she was down as being in it. So I don't know whether that was bullshit or whether her scenes have been cut. I don't know.
Yeah, because we know that obviously half of the Asgardian ship was massacred and half of them escaped. Does this mean we will get to see her in future? But we loved her in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
She was arguably one of the best characters, and especially something so fresh and so badass and completely lawless. And I'm disappointed we didn't get to see her. But of course, like an overstuffed pizza, you know, there was too much to fit in.
I cannot believe for a second that we won't see her again.
She'll be
in part two, I reckon.
Oh, bloody hell.
Remember, we need a force to come back and take the... Yeah. We saw all these characters, 30 of them, whatever, and they couldn't do it. They need help. They need Silver Surfer to come along. They need everyone available.
Yeah.
You know, the X-Men might get involved. Whoever's going to be involved, they're going to need to pull these troops together. So that's when we're getting Captain Marvel. We might then get Ant-Man. We might then get...
Hawkeye.
You never know. They can't all be used in the first half.
No.
And we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp coming in the summer too.
Bring the Wasp as well, Ant-Man, that everyone needs to fucking take on Thanos.
Indeed. They've been very clever, actually, with the future films. So between now and the release of the second Avengers film, part two of this, there's only two films coming out. There's Ant-Man and the Wasp that is set before this, and then I think it's set between Civil War and this. And then there is Captain Marvel, which is set in the 90s. So the next two films aren't going to have any effect on this at all. But then only a year from now, it's in May of 2019. 2019, we're going to get the second part.
Is that all it is? Because yeah. I keep hearing different stuff.
No. It's May next year, guaranteed. It's been locked in.
And is that just called Avengers Thor or something? Is it
Thor or Thor?
Thor.
I'd be happy Thor. It was Avengers Thor. It was just about him and his Warhammer.
Yeah. Oh, it's too long to wait.
I tell you what I was glad to see in this film, Red Skull.
That was a surprise.
Yeah, because I've been wondering for years after the first Captain America film, what the fuck has happened to Red Skull? I'm slightly disappointed that it wasn't actually Hugo Weaving playing him.
Yeah.
Because I love Hugo Weaving. Apparently it was some guy, Ross Marquand, who's in The Walking Dead.
Oh, good for him.
But I stopped watching that show years ago because it's wank. But it was nice to see that character back and get some closure on him.
I did like that, and I didn't know that. You know, there's a lot of spoilers, and everyone's going, Thanos demands your silence, and people spoiling stuff like twats they always do on Facebook. But that's one thing I avoided, which was quite nice, because we went to see it on opening day.
We did.
It was so nice to not have stuff ruined for us. Mm. None of the deaths, none of the heroes, nothing.
Now you say that, there was a guy in front of me where we were sat, and he was Snapchatting certain points throughout the whole film.
Oh, really?
What an absolute dick. Don't ruin it for people who are following you, or just don't ruin it. This is a film that's been shrouded in secrecy, and people deserve to watch this without anything ruined for them.
Yes, yes.
Dick move.
I hope his phone blew up on the way out, or he dropped it or got mugged or something.
I just hope he just popped it down the toilet.
Yeah, idiot.
There's a couple of specific negatives that I want to pick out, but before I get to those, I want to round off with a positive. I loved the ending of the film. You know the bit when all the people started to dissolve? I loved how there was no music on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
They turned off the music entirely. It was just stunned silence. We were cutting back and forth from all the locations where all our heroes were, watching their colleagues and friends and loved ones dissolve into the thin air. And there was nothing. No music, no speech, just stunned silence. I thought that was beautifully done.
I found it quite hard to watch because you were starting to see them accepting that it was probably going to be only a few minutes until they were going to go next.
Yeah.
So you saw, you know, one of the main characters, I think, you know, say, who let's name
T'Challa?
Help me, yeah. T'Challa starts fading away and then you see Batman...
I missed that bit. Is that when I went to the toilet when Batman came
on? You see Spider-Man hug Iron Man and that's devastating. Dark, and then he just fades in his arms and it's fucking hard to watch.
Yes, it is.
And like you said, the silence made it so much more dramatic. And I was literally like, this is bleak as fuck. Like, DC have always got the element of they're very good at being dark.
Yeah.
They know how to do it. They just went, Marvel, hold my beer. Stepped up and went, this is how you do dark. Because I've not seen that sort of darkness on any DC film. That was hard to watch.
Yeah.
One after another.
I know.
My gut was punched.
Yeah.
And as soon as the titles came up, I mouthed to myself, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was devastating. Mm-hmm. I think that's the word that comes to mind, devastating. And then it's followed by that shot of Thanos sitting on some deserted planet looking out at the sunrise.
having a cappuccino.
Yeah, basically. But again, a brilliant bit of CGI, brilliant bit of acting is he didn't look happy. He wasn't like, haha, yeah, I've won. He looked kind of contented, like, I've achieved what I set out to achieve. Like he was relaxed but exhausted.
He was at peace.
He was at peace. Rather than gloating, he was at peace because his mission was a success. And that's where the film ended, cut to black. Crazy, eh?
But one of the best endings, I think, for a Marvel film. The heroes didn't win this time.
Yet.
No.
Yes.
And then we had the nice after credits with Samuel L. Jackson.
I was still trying to recover from that. I was like, Jesus,
you had about 10 minutes of credits to kind of
not
get
enough
your breath.
Time.
That was funny. I liked him coming out of the car like, motherfucker. Yeah. And then he starts to fade. That was good.
I also loved that he's been working it this whole time because for years he's been saying, no, I'm not in Infinity War. It's bullshit. I should be in it. I'm Nick Fury. Why am I not in it? And he was.
Yeah.
He was just working the crowd the whole time. Before we finish up, there's a couple of specific things that I didn't particularly like. One is, I don't like this fancy schmancy Iron Man suit. This nanotech suit that can basically do anything.
Yeah.
I know you don't worry about credibility when it comes to superhero films, I know. But he used to just be a dude in a metal suit that could fly and fire lasers, and that was the limit of his abilities. Now it's like a transformer. He can turn into whatever he wants to be, and it's kind of like, why? There's no need for that shit.
Think of the merchandise.
Yeah, it'll sell more toys, that's why. Yeah.
New range of Funkos, new range of everything. It's true.
Yeah.
The alternative version.
It was just too many bells and whistles for me. And the other thing that I didn't like, and you will think I'm a twat for this because this is just me being a nitpicker, but I don't like when you have differing arrays of pronunciations within one film. So, for example, Thanos. Half the characters called him Thanos, the other half called him Thanos, and then Red Skull called him Thanos. And it's like, if you're the director, all you have to do on stage, on screen, is say to them, right, this is the defined pronunciation. We all say Thanos. Just get them all singing from the same song sheet. And it always reminds me of the film. Have you ever seen the film Ronin, starring Sean Bean and Robert De Niro?
Yes.
Great fucking film. There's a bit in that film where Sean Bean and Robert De Niro are arguing about the fact that De Niro knows that Sean Bean is lying about being in the SAS. So he starts quizzing him about this SAS location in Hereford. But Robert De Niro says, what colour is the boathouse in Hereford? What colour is the boathouse in Hereford? And the director should have said, Rob, I know you're good, but it's not Hereford, it's Hereford. Yeah. You know, and at no point did he do that. And so it sounds fucking stupid to my ears. A bit of consistency, that's all I ask.
It sounds like when me and you, Mark, are trying to pronounce words.
Yeah, but we call you out on it, that's what I'm saying. It needs someone to call people out on it so they get it right.
Do you think he probably just had a bunch of yes men going, yeah, Hereford, that's the probably. One, yeah.
And again, another one, in going back to this film, is one person called, you know, Black Panther's female guard?
Okay, yeah.
One person called them the Dora Milaje, and another person called them the Dora Milaje.
It's like,
pick a pronunciation and stick with it, consistency.
Oh dear.
Well, look, I'm glad that's the only thing you really found to pull
it
apart.
It really
that's
is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Should we score it?
I think we should.
Okay.
Best film of all time.
Shut up!
11 out of 10. It's a 9. And that's bloody damn good. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pick. If we're looking at pronunciations, bloody hell.
It's pronunciations.
You
can't even pronounce that word right.
Yeah. The scale of it was epic. It was done so, so well. I had a blast. And the one thing that we've not talked about is I'm keen for us to go and see it again as soon as possible.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
There's so much that blew my head off. I just want to now breathe and not go and review it and just enjoy it for the 2.5 hour epic it was. So solid 9 out of 10.
I feel like this review has been a therapy session for all of us because I feel so much better talking about my feelings. But I agree with Mark. It's a high 9 out of 10. Easily one of the best Marvel films, and it's why they're shitting all over DC. Bravo.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was great, but because it's only half a film and we haven't actually had the conclusion, I can only give it an 8 out of 10. But that still gives it an overall, skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
It's competition time! Nice and short. If you'd listened to our last episode when we reviewed Rampage, which was the film of our year, that was nice, wasn't it?
Kinda not.
We had some awesome Funko Free sets of the 8-bit Rampage pack, so we kind of were going to review it, but we didn't, but we still had some cool prizes. So both people were catered for, I like that.
And they look amazing, they are
do.
Very cool.
Mm. The question we put out there to win one of these incredible free packs was, what is The Rock's real name? So Gemma?
It's Dwayne Johnson.
It is, and Kevin Burrows on Facebook will be winning that pack, which is awesome. Also, on the last episode, we masturbated over Robert Downey Jr., so our good friends at Funko gave us an Iron Man Funky War Pop, a plush, some daubs, and the Spider-Man Homecoming Tony Stark, which is awesome. So some really good stuff. Really simple question, who directed Iron Man 1? Ben?
John Favreau.
It's true. I'm glad you're saying that because I can't pronounce his name at all. Frank Bradley via email will be getting those in the post. As our rewatch was Sunshine, our good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere gave us an Icarus 2 t-shirt. And the question we put out there was, what was the score that we gave Sunshine on our rewatch?
We gave it 9 out of 10.
We did. And Rob Shepherd won that via email. And what I want to do is, when you get that, like most of our winners, is post a picture because I love seeing that.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Yes.
And you always get a retweet. Also, they gave us a brand new pack of their patches for films. So they've got stuff like Alien and The Thing and all that. A whole pack of 18 different ones to try and make it relevant. Who plays Patch Adams in the film Patch Adams? Back to you, Gemma.
Is it Sir Robin Williams?
It is. Was he a sir?
Well, he is in my eyes.
I don't know if he was officially, but he should be.
Well, because he's American, so no, he wasn't.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But he should have.
Yeah, he is officially from us.
Yeah.
And Donna Wolf on Facebook will be getting the full pack of 18 different patches, which is unbelievable.
And they're lovely designs.
Make a jacket like people do for bands and
what,
stuff.
Yeah. Like Make Punky Brewster movies. In the 80s.
That would be awesome.
Punky Brewster Pooch. Yeah. You have aged yourself with that reference.
I'm actually 55.
My God. Also, we like to reward people that give us an iTunes rating. So what we said was, all of those prizes from Funko were going to come in one big bundle, and all you had to do was leave us a 5-star rating, and Skitstron gave us a 5-star.
I don't know why that's funny, but it is.
It is. Skitstron.
Even the second time.
And he's just put 5 out of 5, never ever skip to the end.
Correct.
Oh, I love that. He knows.
And finally, really simple question to win some awesome Richer Sounds AKG Y50 Bluetooth headphones was, which podcast would you listen to if you won these headphones? Who would you pick, Ben?
Us, obviously.
Exactly.
Us.
And Bethany Mason on Twitter will be getting them. And again, I want to see a picture of you listening to our podcast in those awesome wireless headphones. We're not going to stop. We're going to keep the prizes coming. So Funko have given us a Thor, a Spider-Man, a Thanos, a Captain America, and an Iron Man Funko set of the Avengers, which mm-hmm. is awesome.
Sweet.
What rating did we just give Avengers? Nice and simple. Also, Last Exit to Nowhere, they kind of know, they listen to us, they like us. They knew that we were going to be masturbating over Julianne Moore. So they've come along and given us an awesome, look at this,
oh,
Big Lebowski t-shirt of the cool. Jackie Treehorn Productions tee.
That's
to
cool.
tie in nicely with the Big Lebowski, which they think is their best. Mm. What should we say?
Name the character that Julianne Moore played in The Big Lebowski.
Wow, on the spot. I love it.
Oh, pressure.
And also, as we're going to be re-watching Ghostbusters, they've given us a Stay Puft t-shirt, which is really,
yes.
really cool. Very. Let's make it very simple. What score do we give Ghostbusters in a little bit of time on our rewatch? So you're going to have to kind of listen to that. It's time that we add some prizes as well.
Yay!
What we got, what we got, what we got?
I love prizes.
Give me.
See, so Last Exit to Nowhere have come along and given us free t-shirts for the three of us. So first of all, quite topical actually, Gemma, you have a baseball style Stay Puft t-shirt.
Yay, it's the only marshmallow I eat.
That's
Thank
working.
You.
It's beautiful. Ben, you've also got a t-shirt.
Oh, Nakatomi Corporation.
How
unreal.
Cool is that?
Die hard.
Really nice print. And of course, I went for Jaws, the Amity Island 50th Annual Regatta t-shirt, which is nice and subtle.
It's really cool.
So we've got some nice new t-shirts to wear, so thanks very much.
Thank
Last Exit.
You.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Oh, should we give some more stuff away?
Oh no, I'm spent.
No, we're done.
We've got a couple more things. Richer Sounds have given us some JBL Clip Bluetooth speakers, right? So these are waterproof. They're about the size of a small plate that you'd eat like a cake on, that sort of size plate.
Okay. Small
yes.
plate.
But these are fully waterproof Bluetooth speakers.
You can take them in the shower and that.
And this is what Howie said when he sent them across.
Yeah.
These are going to be for your listeners to listen to you in the bath or the shower.
Nice.
As many of our listeners do. Midnight smoke.
Yes.
He's always having
Old
one in the
smoky.
Bath. He's always having one in the bath. Do you know what they've done about this? They've given us 3 of them to give away. And they're like 50 quid each. They're decent sound quality. So they got them out, tested them, listened to our podcast. We sounded better than ever.
I want one though.
And there's 3 of us.
Yeah.
Hello, we winners.
Synergy.
Yay!
Synergy.
Let's scrap that comp. Give up. No, if you do want to win that, let's say, what podcast would you listen to in the shower if you received it in the post?
I'm starting to see a theme with
yeah.
these.
And finally, we always like to see the iTunes reviews. They're really important to us. It actually does have a difference in getting you higher in the chart.
It does.
Not down to downloads, but it's about different amount of likes and plays and subscribes. So what we're going to do is I will give someone the full set of Funkos that I've just announced if you leave us a 5-star iTunes rating. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Five star,
all day. And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and announce the winner of all these awesome competitions.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pull a name out of the pot and we talk about our favourite performance from said actor or actress. I'm blending the genders.
You've had too much cider.
Are you saying that you're a gender blender?
So on the last episode, we picked out Julianne Moore. So I'm desperate. I'm literally desperate to hear what your favourite performance from Ms. Moore is. So Ben, I want to throw this to you first. Tell me your favourite Julianne Moore performance, and I need to know now.
This was really difficult because she's in my top three actresses of all time. I think she's phenomenal. I've never seen her give a bad performance. I think the woman is ageing in reverse.
Yes.
Because she gets more beautiful, more stunning every day, and her talent will not stop increasing. I adore the woman. But the one I've gone with is Amber Waves in Boogie Nights.
Same here.
No.
Aww. Not for you. I love her to bits in this film. She plays the aging porn star struggling with drug issues in a vicious custody battle. And what could have been a sleazy or broad role in lesser hands has such depth and humanity when played by someone as talented as Julianne Moore. I love how she manages to bring this real maternal vibe to the character, especially in her interactions with the younger porn stars, played by Mark Wahlberg, and especially with Roller Girl, played by Heather Graham. She is this on-set de facto mother to her. And as well as that, there are just some scenes of pure devastation. The most devastating moment for me is when she loses the custody battle, and she's been declared an unfit mother by the court because she's this porn star. And outside of the courthouse, she just breaks down in these heavy, heavy sobs. And it's a beautiful, heartbreaking moment from her. And you kind of understand why she makes or finds this makeshift family within the porn community, because her real life, her real family, is disintegrating. And within these people who she has this shared experience with, she finds a new form of family. It's an extraordinarily warm performance, and you wouldn't expect that from... If you just read the tagline for the character, you know, Julianne Moore plays an aged porn star, you wouldn't expect it to be this warm, maternal character. But it never feels like a parody. It never feels like a stereotype of what we'd expect from an old porn star to be. It's entirely unique and entirely Julianne Moore.
When we see her act in the pornographic film, she's terrible. She's really wooden. It's like she's reading off a cue card.
Yeah.
But when you actually see her perform as Amber Waves, the depth, the heart, the soul, she has such a magnetic attraction whenever you see her on a screen. You forget about everybody else that's within that shot. It's Julianne Moore you focus on. This is easily one of my favourite performances from her, because it is from one of my favourite films ever. And she plays Amber with awareness of her actions and how addiction is hard to kick. But yeah, there's always the thing that grounds her the most is love. And she looks for love everywhere. Mm-hmm. She looks for it with Dirk. She looks for it with Roller Girl. She even looks for it with Burt Reynolds. Reynolds' character too. But at the end of it, you see her story isn't complete, her story isn't finished, but she almost finds this sense of knowing who she is, and she's comfortable with it when we see her just staring back at a reflection dressed all in white with her new bob cut.
Yeah.
But she knows exactly who she is and she's happy. But that's the only resolution we can get from this character.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Mark.
And I know it's not your pick, Mark, but we watched this film recently as a rewatch.
And
didn't
I enjoyed it. And yeah, it's one of those films, again, Paul Thomas Anderson is the dog, the master.
The dog.
The dog. The top
the
dog.
Dirty dog.
He's the big dog. But he is. And
this is his yard.
He, 100%. He reminded us of why he's one of the best. And I know, Ben, he's one of your favourite filmmakers.
Absolutely.
Of the fucking decade. And he's just incredible. And revisiting it, it just made me realise that Mark Wahlberg is an incredible actor that we don't give enough credit for. Even though she's one of the best actresses, you do look at her and remember that she's better than you remember. And that is mad.
Yeah.
You know, you do need reminding. And when she puts her mind to it and does this dramatic performance again and again, I don't know how she can just... She doesn't do any shite.
No.
Seventh
ever.
Seal.
Seventh Seal.
But her shit to good ratio is significantly better than most actresses of her stature.
Even when we watched Kingsman 2, which was shit,
she was the best.
Absolutely.
Everything she tried, she nailed.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Just like Boogie Nights.
Exactly like Boogie Nights. So mine is Maud Lebowski from The Big Lebowski.
Of course it was.
That would have been my second choice.
Yes. It's someone that I always associate as being a very dramatic actress in all her performances, but when she takes that leap to comedy, she still plays it seriously, even though the character is so silly. She's giving it everything. She's not kind of just playing, oh, I'll do this for fun. She's putting everything into this performance that makes it very serious, even though the character is ridiculous and stupid.
Uh-huh.
So we have this feminist artist that is devoting her work to the vagina. That is pretty much it.
Yes.
She explains why the vagina scares men and is obsessed.
Sing it, sister.
She has this she supports this strange accent that still to this day, even though I've watched the film 100 times, I can't work it out.
I love the accent. It's so funny.
It's amazing. And she's so confident. And Ben, you were just saying there she gets better with age. She has this sex appeal in this film still that is odd. I don't know why, but I'm still very attracted to her as this weird character. And she is very, very weird in this film. But she's amazing. We get to see her fall in bed with the dude. We see this comic force. We see this mad character. And she isn't even in it that much.
Yes.
It's a small part, probably 10 minutes for the whole film. But for me, I just absolutely love it when she goes to comedy, she nails it, and then the next role she'll do something, the most serious thing ever, like Hannibal, like fucking Still Alice, and still can jump into Boogie Nights and Big Lebowski and just give everything that she can possibly give.
Do you know what it is? It's the confidence.
That's what makes me hard.
She...
for her.
Okey-dokey.
I had a valid reason, an explanation, and I'm speechless. So, yes. Ben.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's the sign of a great actor or actress that you can jump into any role, be it comedy, be it dramatic, be it, you know, serious, wacky, whatever, and do it equally well. She can do everything. She can do everything and anything. And that's why she's the goddamn best. I entirely love this woman.
Yeah.
Some say she's the female Stifler.
Oh my God.
We have to get him involved. Comedy,
Stifler
serious.
Cast.
You ask him to do it, yeah. He'll nail them both.
And I have heard that Sean Michael Scott has changed his name. Sean William Scott has changed his name legally to Stifler.
Yeah.
That's what's on his passport now.
Stiffcast.
That's you, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Vote. Vote. If you're listening, vote.
Yeah, if this ain't award winning, I don't know what is.
What have our sexy, incredibly intelligent social media come up with this time round?
That's a good question, Mark. Well done.
I'm not going to answer it, but it's a nice question.
On Facebook, Simon Armstrong has said Clarice Starling in Hannibal. She did really well to step into an already well-established character's shoes. She made the character more likeable and seem more human, especially when faced with the horrors of both Lecter and Mason Verger.
So nicely said.
See, it's a tough one. Because everyone loves Silence of the Lambs more than Hannibal, when I think of Clarice, I think of Jodie Foster. But that's not to say that Julianne Moore didn't do a fantastic job. She absolutely did. She's just not synonymous with that particular character. On Twitter, Jeff at JeffJames73 has said she did a great job in Evolution. She was smart and funny with just the right amount of quirkiness, and she meshed well with David Duchovny.
I completely forgot she was in that.
Great film.
It is really fun, isn't it? It's a lot of fun, that film, actually. On Twitter, Ross Miller at Ross T. Miller has said Maud in The Big Lebowski agrees with
Yeah.
He said it sticks out for him. Such a fun performance of a distinctive character in a film full of them.
Nice.
Indeed. On Instagram, Josh Griffin Drums has said Magnolia. Such an explosive, emotional performance in an incredibly moving film.
Oh my God,
hell to the yes.
Why have we not rewatched that
Mate,
yet?
We've said this about 18 times. It's on the list. It's going
but
to get
pulled
up.
But it needs to be higher on the list.
Well, the problem is, dude, I know what your attention span is like, and the film is 3 hours long.
90 so, minutes minimum.
I'm waiting until a day when the main review film is like 45 minutes long.
Oh, dear.
On Twitter, Dan Rhodes 76 at Bodney 76. So many great performances to choose, but I'd go with Amber Waves in Boogie Nights as my favourite. Agrees with me and Gemma.
Got a good point.
Joseph Menard on Facebook has said The Hunger Games Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2. She was great. Her turning into a villain was well done. Yeah, again, shit films, but she's good.
I've never seen them. Sure, it's quite nice to say that, you know. It winds people up. Why have you not seen them? Because I can say this to you now and it annoys you. That's why I haven't seen them.
Yeah. To be fair, the films are like the books. The first two are great. And then the Mockingjay stuff is arse.
Oh.
I wouldn't bother. On Twitter, Dave Old, at Dave Old Not Young, loved her in Children of Men, and, spoiler alert, her death was so unexpected.
Oh my God.
That film's amazing.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Again, another underrated film.
Maybe another for the rewatch. You
Absolutely.
Never know with us. We might just pull it out of the bag one day.
What are we going to do next?
On Facebook, Erica Bina said Freedomland. She plays the vulnerability of this role very well. Her character is so fragile and damaged and pathetic, and you simultaneously feel sorry for her and want to shake her for being such a fuck-up. I must say I've not seen Freedomland, so I can't comment on that.
Me neither.
But thank you, Erica. We'll take your word for it. And then finally, Santoka on Twitter, at Santoka, has said Poppy in Kingsman Golden Circle, brackets, just messing.
You little monkey.
His real pick was Boogie Nights. But again, as we've said, she was the best thing in that film.
Yeah.
She was genuinely great, even though the film was toss.
We did. We gave her a lot of praise on that episode.
Indeed.
I'm up for whipping it out and giving it a rub. So who are we masturbating over on the next episode?
Well, it's my turn to pick out of the pot, and we're getting low, man. We've literally only got 5 names left in the pot. So here we go.
Okay.
Can I have a drum roll, please? Right.
Drum roll sounds better than ever.
It does, doesn't it? Bassy.
In 2 weeks' time, we should be masturbating over Scarlett Johansson.
Yes!
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Normally at this section, we will now introduce the rewatch, but can we just take a second to appreciate that theme music that was just on? That is by far the greatest.
Ghostbusters! I'm afraid of no ghosts.
I love. Busting makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Should we score it?
Yeah, 10 out of
10. Done.
So, if you hadn't worked out at this point that the rewatch is the classic Ghostbusters, yep, you're probably a bit insane.
Thought you were going to say Bridges of Madison County.
I really hope that all the listeners out there have jumped on board this week and watched it on DVD or Blu-ray or video or whatever you've got, because this film is epic. Yeah. Let's just get straight to it.
Betamax.
That would be good.
Whatever you got.
If you haven't seen the film, I'm going to give you a little brief introduction of what happens. It's not a hard one, this one. It's real short. So
that's what she said. Oh, mate. That was the perfect setup.
That was brilliant. After the members of a team of scientists lose their cushy jobs in a university in New York, they decide to become Ghostbusters, which is exactly what it says on the tin. They go out to basically make money from attacking the supernatural. It's that simple, and they become the Ghostbusters and take on a series of ghosts, poltergeists, spirits, and Big Marshmallow Man. That's the film, and I'm not going to go and give you any more because I don't care. Anyone that's listening right now knows what happens in Ghostbusters. You saw the cartoon as a kid.
Yeah.
You've seen the film. You've seen the shit remake. You know exactly what it is. So let's get straight into it. These two are still giggling about everything.
I'm really sorry. I thought you were going to try and attempt to say parapsychology, and I was setting myself up for it.
Fuck you. So, fuck you, and let's go to Ben. Talk to me about Ghostbusters, because a little insight, you've just come from the cinema.
Well, this is it. So the film came out in 1984, so I was approximately 1 year old. I didn't get to see it in the cinema. I've seen it many, many times on TV, video, DVD, etc. As luck would have it, my local cinema, my local independent cinema, and when I say local, I mean local, it's a 5-minute walk from my flat, was showing Ghostbusters on the big screen today.
Yeah.
So I, this morning, went to see Ghostbusters on the big screen for the first time. I thought the film was spectacular anyway, but now I know it is. Seeing it on the big screen with an audience, phenomenal. I was so envious of people who got to see it live for the first time in 1984, and I now know how they felt. What a wonderful film.
You haven't seen it today, Gemma.
No, I haven't seen it today, but I've seen it.
And I hope you've seen it this week.
Of course, it's the rewatch.
And how was it rewatching it?
Friggin' wonderful. I bloody love it. Everybody should have watched this at least once in their lives. If they haven't, who are you? Ugh, go away.
That's a nice polite way.
By the way, I love you all. But it is incredible. It's a stalwart in cinema history. I think it's one of those things, if you are a film lover, you have to at least watch this. And you have to love it. I love it. And it's not by the fact that there's somebody telling me that I have to. I love it because I love it. Yay! Ghostbusters!
For me, it's the perfect marriage of comedy and spookiness. It is scary. As much as people say it's a comedy and it's a comedy classic... When you're a kid watching this, dude...
Old lady in the library.
It's scary.
Okay, well, I refute that because I was in the cinema today with kids who were no older than 4 years old and they were chuckling their way through it. At no point did they weep or cry or run scared. So if you were scared by it, you need to sort your life out.
But don't they play like Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, that's kids true. Are different nowadays.
They're a lot more into knife crime now, aren't they? They're not bothered, are they?
Love a good shank.
Desensitised.
As Watkins says, they're a lot more advanced now at this age. Now, when I was a kid who was 5 or 6, genuinely, and this goes back to the day when I was a young child at primary school, and this is a little inside story again. Me and Pooh Pocket Williams.
He's back.
Oh, old Pooh Pocket.
PPW.
His mum and dad were very, very cool for us watching films. So I think I've told you that we were allowed to watch Alien when we were 8 or something. And they were cool with us watching Ghostbusters. So my mum and dad were like, you're not watching Ghostbusters until you're 12 or whatever. So we went to Pooh Pocket 12. Williams' house. You know, that's the age in this house.
God.
We sat at his house and old Pooh Pocket mum said, you can watch it. Here's the video. We rented it from Blockbuster Video. Old school.
I miss that.
Old school. I do miss that, because you go and find like old, you know, really cool classics.
Yeah.
Put it on, and when those dogs started to crack and the red eyes came up, I ran out of the room because I was only about 6, didn't shit myself in his house, which would have been
that's
good.
A surprise.
Ran to the kitchen, and his mum was sat there watching it as well.
Yeah.
Because they had one of those illegal SCART boxes where you could put it on different TVs. Nice, remember that? Old school.
Yeah, I would never
so
do anything
as
like
I ran
that.
In and went, oh my God, to his mum. Looked around and it was the full dog then out of the thing. So I just shit myself. Literally.
You evacuated.
You're doing metaphorically shit yourself.
Yeah,
at this
I didn't
point.
Actually dribble.
No, it's not
no,
E.T.
No. Because that shit is scary.
But I was crying, I think. Just in horrible experience. And at that point, I did think, at 6 years old, dude, those dogs were scary.
You're soft as shit, aren't you?
Well, I don't know.
You've lived a sheltered life. You need toughening up, pal.
Talk to E.T. He'll know.
It's not good, and I'm not proud of it, and I've told a lot of people now, but yeah. It was scary, dude. And even the opening scene with the library.
Yes,
it was scary, dude.
Who the fuck thinks this film is scary?
The old lady.
I want you to turn into Benjamin Button. Honestly, start going young. Does he go old or young?
He's younger. He's younger. Oh my god.
He goes young. Yes.
Yeah, he goes.
So I want Ben in 10 episodes time to be about 6.
Yeah.
And we'll put him in a nappy and we'll make him sit here watch it.
Well, as I've said though, I did see it at that age and wasn't scared by it. And I have just been in the cinema with children younger than that who were laughing at it.
So I'm a pussy. Yes. All right, fine.
Those are the facts.
All right, let's get into the actual film. I'm a pussy. Fuck you both. But it's a great film.
But it's an interesting point you bring up, though. This term family-friendly gets used a lot with films these days. Oh, it's a family-friendly film. It's a family film. And what that usually means is it's a kid's film that adults have to suffer through because it's shite and childish. This, to me, is the proper definition of a family film, in so much as kids of the age of 4, like the guys who are at the cinema with today, were thoroughly enjoying it, but so were their parents, laughing at the kind of sexual innuendo and the slightly more adult jokes. There's something for everyone. And even though there's a bit of swearing in it, there's a few shits thrown in. No 4-year-old kid has ever been harmed by hearing the word shit.
Couple of dicks,
too. A couple of dicks, too, indeed. It is a proper family film, and I don't think you get many of those these days.
No. One of my main notes that I did while watching this is they don't make movies like this anymore.
Oh, it's so true.
And when they try, they suck. The effects look awful, I bet, now, in the cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the time, they looked amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Marshmallow Man, I believed, was that big.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the iconic pictures of them on set where it's like a Sabutio-sized board and they're filming it all?
Uh-huh.
It's amazing, dude. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it
does. I'm sorry, it does. Now it looks absolute. Those dogs look awful.
But the thing is, though, as bad as they look, they're kind of charming in a way. They have that kind of Ray Harryhausen quality of kind of stop motion, animation thing, puppetry or whatever. And even though they don't look as good as the classic or the clear CGI we now get in Avengers, they still look great and I love them for it. They're cheap, but in a fun way, in a way that you can't help but love.
Absolutely. It's very nostalgic.
Yeah.
It takes you back to a time when you were a kid and some of us were shitting ourselves, but it still takes you to that part of your life. But for me, the main thing about this film is the chemistry between the actual Ghostbusters themselves.
Cast.
Incredible. Can you imagine anybody else playing Venkman?
Hell no.
Because Bill Murray is the motherfucking man.
He is at his cynical and sarcastic best as Dr. Peter Venkman.
And the majority of his lines were all ad-libbed. This wasn't scripted. This all came from the very wise brain of Mr. Murray, and it worked every single time.
Yeah. This is a man who was doing improv at Second City in Chicago from a very young age. There is no better improviser than Bill Murray.
No, and he's got a natural coolness about him. There's a likability. So it's a very congenial thing to just be drawn to him, not just as a character, but also as an actor. And it's one of the reasons why I love Ghostbusters so much. Every time I think of Ghostbusters, I see Bill Murray's little face light up in front of me with his, like you said, his sad sack quality.
Yeah.
But he's great. He is the man. He's the man that you want to be. If you're going to be with your mates and you're all going to play Ghostbusters, who's going to be Venkman? The first person that puts their arm up, which is everyone.
He's the first figure I got with my pocket money at the age. When I had the tower and the Slimer and all that and the car, he was the first figure you wanted. You always wanted the backpack that he had. You wanted the outfit with his name on.
Yes.
He's the man.
Yeah.
The thing is, right, the cast is incredible and we talk about Bill Murray as being the best. We have. But let's talk about Ernie Hudson.
See, I love Ernie Hudson, and I think he gets short shrift in this. People forget him. He doesn't come into the film until halfway through it, and they don't give him any kind of background at all. You don't know where he comes from, what his experience is. They just dump him in.
Yeah.
But he's great. I love
him. He's fun.
Yeah.
He gets more to do in the second one, which I hope we do as a rewatch in the future, because I'm one of the few people who actually thinks the second is as good as the first.
I like it.
Most people think it's inferior because they've made it more kiddie-ish than the first, but it is still brilliant. But I love him.
Yeah.
I think he's great.
I wanted more development from him. I wanted to know his motivation. I wanted to know his backstory.
Did you know this? That when they wrote the original script, the part for Winston was going to be far more substantial and they offered it to Eddie Murphy?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And Eddie turned it down. But think of that.
I bet he regrets that now.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Now that he's doing...
Pluto Nash, the sequel.
Oh, Lord. Gosh. But Dan Aykroyd. Now we're talking.
Dan Aykroyd's my
God.
Oh, God. One of the funniest dudes. He's a great actor as well. He's very underrated as an actor because people know him as a comedian primarily. But he's just the king as Ray, isn't he?
I love him when he's so naive when they're looking around the premises for where they're going to be based at. And he's just like a kid. He's like, my God, have you seen this ball? Yeah. It's like, that's exactly how we would be if we were in that building about to embark on his business.
Exactly, because Egon's trying to talk the woman down, the estate agent. He's saying, no, the wiring's all shot. We need it's a fixer-upper, blah, 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 getting the money down. And then Ray's, I want this place. I'm going to go down the pole. I'm going to go and get my stuff.
What's happened to him?
Dan Aykroyd.
Age.
I know, I just haven't seen him on screen for years.
He's still around, he still does the odd thing, but he doesn't do that many things anymore because, you know, he's an old fella now. I imagine he's probably in his 60s, maybe?
Yeah, maybe more, he's just chilling.
I mean, even Murray, think about it, Bill Murray doesn't do that many films.
No, how more often voice work now.
Yeah, how often is there a new Bill Murray film? Once every 2-3 years, tops?
Around about that figure. Yeah.
Let's move on to Egon. Oh my god. What's his real name?
Harold Ramis. And sadly, he's no longer with us, but he was absolutely brilliant. And he co-wrote it with Aykroyd as well.
Beautiful.
He brings an intelligence to the group. So everybody has their own little quirk to contribute to this chemistry. But for me, he was the brains. He was the one that was kind of pulling them all together and actually getting them on the straight and narrow. So aside from the jokes and the wisecracks, he was the straight man of the group.
Yes.
And apparently I read that he specifically chose at no point in the film to smile.
Really?
Yeah, no matter what wackiness or funniness was going on around him, he always chose to keep it cool because he was the smart one.
I need to watch it again now.
Yeah, he was the one who was always thinking it through, so he doesn't smile at any point in the film, Egon.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
One character I wasn't scared of before you start laying into me again is Slimer, and he is one of the coolest, and he doesn't look that dated, does he? For the CGI that he is.
Yeah. I'll be honest.
See it on a big screen.
Yeah.
He looks shit, does he? Yeah.
And so relatable, because that's exactly what I'm like when I see a buffet.
Oh, nice. But I always thought he looked great, and maybe I haven't watched it enough on a big screen in the cinema, but on a TV size screen, he looks good still. I think he looks convincing, and he was a great figure to have.
I love the luminous green about him, and there's like a soft focus around his actual figure, so it does make him look like a ghost. Yeah. He used to scare me, but amuse me at the same time.
And one of my favourite films in the film is when we first experience Slimer, and he's coming towards Venkman, and then you cut away before those two meet, and you cut away, I think it's to Ray. And then Ray comes back and you see Venkman on the floor just covered in ectoplasm. Mark, have you ever woke up covered in ectoplasm? More than once, I imagine.
Science point to yes.
But you see Venkman covered in ectoplasm and he goes, he slimed me. I just love that line. He slimed me. And that's how they got the name Slimer. That's how Slimer became this big character.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
No.
You learn something new every day.
Because at no point do they call him Slimer. No. They refer later on in the film to Slimers, but they don't. He individually wasn't called Slimer until the cartoon. That's where they gave him that name.
Well, I never.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. And we need to talk about Ripley. That is her real name. Ripley. I'm not taking any other
AKA.
Name. Yes.
Look, I know it's not the done thing anymore. We're not supposed to say that women are good looking because it's rude, you know, this outrage age we live in. But Sigourney Weaver was fucking hot, wasn't she?
Yes.
Beautiful.
She still is.
Still is, big
but
time.
Yeah, in that film, there's one point when she's on the bed and she goes, I want you inside me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. I want to be inside you.
All right, too far. Carry on.
No, I wouldn't go too far. I'd put it in the book and then I'd put it out and put it back in. But again, anyway.
That is too far.
That Emma. Is very...
That's... Still not too far.
Oh my God.
But she's incredible. And we do know her as Ripley. We do. Yes. That's the thing. And to see her in this as such a different character, and you know she's having fun. On set, being all wacky with that big, iconic black hair.
Yeah.
She's so, so good. And I do feel like she's being possessed. I do feel that she's got these eyes that are going to... She's so demon. She plays it so well.
Yeah.
I was terrified the first time when I was a kid watching her rotate above the bed, and I couldn't think for the life of me how they'd done it. Of course, I've seen Behind the Magician's Code now. I know exactly how that shit's done. But again, it's simple special effects that pull you into the scene. It's incredible. But yeah, she was alluring.
She was absolutely gorgeous, and she's a fantastic actress as well. And her interplay with Bill Murray especially, those two are brilliant together.
Made to act with each other.
Again, it's another reason why I adore the sequel, just more of those two together. But something you've just mentioned there, talking about the effects that are used. This Blade Runner book that I've been mentioning earlier, this Future Noir, I'm currently on the section about the special effects, and a lot of it's talking about matte painting, when you have a certain amount of real life effects, but then you get really high quality real life painters who paint shit that then looks like the rest of it. And the reason why I bring this up in Ghostbusters is, Mark, when you went to New York, I know you went to some of the Ghostbusters locations. Did you go to the firehouse?
I did.
Yeah. Did you go to the apartment building where everything happens at the end at 55 Central Park West? Yeah. So when you actually get there, it's... You're looking forward to going to see the building where it all happens, and you get there and you're like, oh, disappointing. Yeah. It's because the top 20 floors or so don't actually exist.
Yeah.
In the film, you see the real building, and then everything that's up at the top, all the shit that's going on with Gozer the Gozerian, is a matte painting.
Oh.
And that's how amazing these painters are, that they can paint things that are then blended in with the special effects and the real life shots that make these buildings look twice as tall as they actually are.
I'm literally going back to when I was 6 years old.
I know.
These guys, I think they're maybe the unsung heroes of special effects. And to be honest, they don't really have a lot of work these days because everything's done with CGI. But back in the 80s and the early 90s, these matte painters who would do all these behind the scenes things to make things look like in Blade Runner. A lot of the street scenes, and when Deckard is hanging from the top of the building, and you see the Los Angeles streets below him. That's paintings.
It's mad, isn't
and,
it?
And these guys it's don't incredible. Get the credit, but so much of the work in Ghostbusters is down to these guys.
Everything. Look at some of the makings of on YouTube, stuff like Indiana Jones, all these films.
Yeah,
it's mad. It will blow your mind. You think that's got to be real. So yeah, when I went, it was a lot shorter.
Yeah, exactly.
The buildings are a bit underwhelming.
Well, when I think I went the year before you to it, yeah. And it was covered in scaffolding. I was like, oh shit.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but it's great.
We've yet to talk about Rick Moranis.
Oh,
I'm saving him.
What a man.
Oh, yeah.
The best.
Yeah. I love how nerdy he is. He's just, it's nerd but times 25.
Yeah.
He's completely over the top with it. And I just love the little thing where he constantly gets locked out of his own apartment. But how about this for a little segue? Because he's the key holder. And he keeps getting locked out of his apartment. And then eventually he's got the keys.
Yeah, I read that actually as a little trivia bit. But yeah, he gets locked out three times and then he turns out to be the key holder. See?
Twist.
All of this shit is planned, man.
Bloody hell.
Nothing by accident.
That is amazing.
But he's such a great actor and he plays this little nebbishy nerd really well. It's because of his size. Because he's 5 foot fuck all. It just works so well.
That's what I am.
But you're a lady.
I know, it's fine. Still tiny. Like a tiny little dum thumb.
And again, I'm just repeating something we've probably said half a dozen times, but I miss that guy.
I do.
We all understand why he retired because his wife died. He looked after his kids and so on.
Fully understandable. Mm-hmm.
What a great screen presence Rick Moranis was.
I would love one day him to come back on screen. Even though everything that's happened, I understand it's probably not easy, but one day just come back out of the blue in a film just to remind everyone why you loved him. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, everything, 80s, is all him.
Yeah.
And he did it every time, knocked it out of the park, and it's so unfortunate what happened because he would have been still going now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Yeah. People like Bill Murray still are, he still would have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We miss you. He's not dead.
He's dead. He's not dead.
He's not dead.
So I want to talk about the ending when the Stay Puft Man turns up, the big marshmallow man. And something that I noticed today, watching it on the big screen for the first time that I'd never noticed before, is that there are seeds planted all through the film about Stay Puft. So when Dana, when we first see Sigourney Weaver come back to her apartment, she is carrying a bag of Stay Puft marshmallows, and you see the logo. Then later on, midway through the film, it's when the cat or the EPA shut off the containment machine and all the ghosts bust through the roof of the firehouse. You see the building next to the firehouse has a billboard up for Stay Puft marshmallows.
Wow.
And these little seeds have been planted all the way through, and I'd never noticed that before. So he doesn't just come out of nowhere.
He's there all along.
And it makes sense because the whole thing of the film is, you know, Gozer says, you know, whatever you think of basically is what's going to be your final defeat or whatever.
Yeah.
And Ray ends up thinking the Stay Puft Man. And if you didn't know those seeds are planted, you think, why would that be the first thing he thought of? Why is that in his head? But it's because he's seen, arguably, these billboards and so on and so forth. It's
subliminal planted. Messaging.
Foreshadowing. Beautifully done.
We need to do more of that on this podcast. Mm-hmm. We do. We need to start planting stuff in, you know, buy a t-shirt, that sort of stuff.
Vote,
yes, and then buy us beers.
But going back to the thing I mentioned there about when the containment unit gets blown up, the reason for that is because of the EPA agent played by my guy, William Atherton. So Peck, who's an absolute douchebag. And we've talked about Peck before when we reviewed Die Hard. He always plays a dickhead in films. He's made a character, a whole career of being dicks. And I love him. He's such an arsehole. And for all that I call him a dick, obviously he gets called dickless in the film.
Yes.
I love that guy.
It is true. This man has no dick.
This man has no dick. And I think I might have mentioned this before on a podcast, but the TV edit that first came out for that film is they replaced the word dick with the word twinkie. This man has no twinkie. What?
What the fuck does that mean? Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't know about you guys. I'm ready to score it.
It's been
a lot of fun. I'm jealous now I didn't get to go to the cinema today. I wish I'd seen it on the big screen.
You should have come with me.
They'll have it again. Yeah. There'll be some anniversary. And the second one we'll definitely do as a rewatch at some point.
All right.
Gemma, what's your score out of 10?
I'd be crazy not to give it a 10. So for me, it's a 10 out of 10.
Nice. Ben? You can't say it doesn't stand the test of time.
Join us.
It's be one of us.
To me, this film is like a digestive biscuit. I never want one. I'm never really that interested in a digestive biscuit. But then I have one. I think, I fucking love digestive biscuits.
Yeah?
And that is how I felt today. So it's 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Nice! Would that be a McVitie's?
McVitie's?
That's McVitie's Digestive Biscuits.
It's a 6 for me. I just...
Oh, shush him out.
It's a clear run. It's all 10s, which is what it should be. So overall, skip to the end, give Ghostbusters a 10 out of 10.
Hooray!
So whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's mine.
You've got to pick a big one now. That's... that. 10 out of 10 has been a long time.
It is.
I don't think it is. I'm sure we've given that.
I did give a 10 a few times. Fargo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not going to choose that because we've already done that. On the next episode, I think we should do something visual. Ooh. I'm a big fan of visual films.
Porn.
That was Mark saying that. Yeah,
that was Mark. Yeah. All him. So I'm going to go for a film that actually has a little bit of a tie-in with our next segment. And I can't believe we've never done this before. On the next episode, we will be rewatching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes!
All right, Guardians, don't forget, this might be dangerous, so let's put on our mean faces.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to get quizzical. It's the third
Let's
round.
Let's get quizzical.
Quizzical.
I want to get quizzical.
Let's get in a quizzical. Let me hear your voice talk with the right answers.
All right,
right
you're taking
answers.
The piss now too much. But
you freaking love it.
I think quizzical should be a future name for one of our quizzes. Right. Write that down.
All right, yeah. Trademark. Brilliant. Copyright. Let's
quizzical.
Get quizzical.
Yeah. Okay, and I am Quizzy Rascal. So...
That's another name for a quiz.
You're taking the quiz now, Gemma.
This is great. We've got two brand new quizzes formed from
our
introduction.
And I haven't even talked about the third and final round of our current quiz. It is round 3, the last round of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Hey-o!
This round, we have got Ben versus Mark. So currently, the points stand as it is. So I am on 13 points. Mark is on 7 points and Ben is on 8 points. This really is all to play for. How are you guys feeling?
I need to change my pants.
I can
see.
I'm
very nervous.
Ben.
Yeah, I feel fine, man. Just chilling.
Excellent. So the rules of the game are as follows. The guys have come up with their specialist subject. What I'm going to do is ask them 10 questions each. Rules are really simple. Highest score wins. And of course, we've got that combined score, so it really is anybody's game. So... who wants to go first? I don't feel like I should go you're first or you're first. I feel like it should be down to you guys.
I want Mark to go first because Mark currently has the lowest score. So I want to see what I have to try and beat.
Are you going to accept?
Well, I've got no options. So
there
yes.
we go. Hooray. So Mark, what is your specialist film subject?
The movie Clerks.
Wow.
Oh dear.
Here we go. So Mark, no pressure, but your specialist subject is Clerks. 10 questions. Begin now. What year was Clerks released?
1994.
Correct. Who wrote and directed Clerks?
Kevin Smith.
Oh my God.
Correct.
How many softballs do you want to throw him?
Pipe down.
Where is the Quick Stop located?
New Jersey.
Red Bank, New Jersey.
Yes.
Should have known that. He's been there.
We weren't. Oh no, we didn't. You should come
you
next
did.
Time. Yeah. Come with me, dude.
Correct. Which ice hockey team jersey is Dante wearing during the hockey game?
Oh my God. New Jersey Devils?
Incorrect. That was the opposition, but it was Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh dude.
Mm. Already dropping points.
Next question. Which relation of Kevin Smith makes an appearance as the milkmaid?
It's his mom.
Well done. Correct. Which band closed the film with their song Can't Even Tell?
Soul Asylum?
Correct.
Dude, he's killing it.
That's tough.
What is the name of the poem that Clerks is loosely based on, written by Dante Alighieri?
Fuck knows.
The Divine Comedy.
Imagine it was actually called Fuck Knows.
Yes, correct.
I didn't know that, but that makes sense why the lead character is called Dante.
There we go.
Wow.
Trivia. Next question. What is the lewd cleaning-inspired insult that a customer is greatly offended by?
The what?
What is the lewd cleaning-inspired insult... that a customer is greatly offended by?
Jizz mopper.
Correct!
Amazing.
Which of Kevin Smith's good friends played four characters in the film?
Four characters.
In the film.
Is Walt Flanagan?
Correct!
Dude!
And finally, who wasn't supposed to be here today?
Dante.
Correct! Well done.
Oh, good stuff.
Mark, that was Titan-esque, and you scored yourself 8 points.
Wow, all right. Applause for that.
God, that was horrible.
So,
did well.
You are now on 15 points. You were in the lead.
Well, yeah, but he hasn't gone yet.
Yeah, but Gemma's had 2 rounds.
Please
so
be a power cut.
Gemma's definitely lost.
Power cut. Power cut.
So, Ben, it's your go.
I'm nervous.
So, tell our good listeners, what's your specialist subject?
Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, my God. So, we've got 10 questions for you. And it starts now. What year was Reservoir Dogs released?
In the US, 1992. In the UK,
1993. Oh, we showed off already. I love it. Who wrote and directed Reservoir Dogs?
Quentin Tarantino.
Correct. Which colour is missing from the gang? Mr. Blue, Mr. Blonde, Mr. Pink, Mr. White, Mr. Orange?
Mr. Brown.
Correct. Which singer is discussed by the group in the opening scene in the diner?
Madonna.
Correct. Which of the main cast co-produced the movie?
Harvey Keitel.
Oh, he's got it. Correct. Who voices DJ K. Billy, the host of Sounds of the 70s?
Stephen Wright.
Yes, correct again.
The Behemoth.
I love that. I fucking love that.
The entire soundtrack budget was spent on securing which song?
Oh, shit. That's a great question.
Thank you.
Now, I'm just thinking out loud. This is not my
of
answer. I'm thinking out loud.
You can
It's
away.
Either Little Green Bag or Stuck in the Middle with You, I would assume. I'm going to go with Little Green Bag.
Incorrect. It was Stuck in the Middle with You.
Fuckstick.
I'm really, really sorry, but we've got the next question. A radio advert is heard in the background for a restaurant that is seen in another Tarantino film. Which restaurant is it?
Jackrabbit Slim's.
Correct.
Great choice. Oh.
Michael Madsen's character shares the same surname as another character in Tarantino's following film after Reservoir Dogs. What is that surname?
Vega.
Correct. And then finally, what is Mr. Pink's reason for not tipping in the diner?
Oh, shit. Do you know what? I watched this film yesterday. I watched this whole rant about how he doesn't tip. But I can't remember his reason why, his little weasel Steve Buscemi face.
It's very weaselly, I know, but I need an answer.
Oh, fuckerama. What score am I on?
You've won it.
You're tired. You got 8.
Yeah, but I've won it.
So I've already won.
Yeah, but, just give a reason.
Oh, fuck it, I don't care. Pass.
Correct. No, he doesn't believe in tipping.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine.
Wow, I don't know about you guys. I'm shaking and I'm not even taking part. So, Ben, you got 8 on that round, but hey. The final scores is as follows. In third place, a bronze medal position, is myself in 13 points. Mark, you're silver. You got 15, but gold, take a bow. Ben with 16 points.
Thank you.
Amazing. That was really good fun.
Yeah, it was good fun. And I must applaud both of you because yes. We all did really fucking well on that.
One
to
point
be fair.
Off isn't bad for
that
me.
That was amazing. Well done, guys.
Yeah. We've all kind of talked off air about how we've all avoided using our actual favourite films because the last thing we wanted to do was pick things like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or The Thing or Blade Runner and then shit the bed and have Twitter followers going, you're supposed to be the biggest fans and you got it wrong. So we purposely pick films that are slightly lower on our list. Yeah. A little behind the scenes
it's
news
fine.
For you there.
We can all take a bit of pride as well. I think we've done well.
We have. Round of applause. Well done.
Round of applause.
So, a new quiz in another episode's time?
Absolutely, which we've definitely come up with, I guarantee.
I need you guys to stay behind tonight as well, about something as well. But
yeah, okay. That's not connected to this. It's something separate, I'm sure.
Not Perfect. At all.
It's that time for the point of the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. La di da di da.
Lovely.
I might come up with a jingle, like a song to go along with it.
I'll do a little backing track as well. Make it sound really well produced.
Yeah.
Pretty good, pretty good. Pooch, I'm going to throw it over to you first. What are you enjoying right now?
Okay, so I'm enjoying a t-shirt range.
Oh.
I'm going fashion, darling.
Wow.
I've not done that before, yeah.
I know. And it's actually a t-shirt I'm wearing.
Oh.
So the company is called Girls on Tops.
I can see what they've done there.
Oh, yeah.
Stuck to their name well.
Exactly. So you can find them on Twitter and Instagram with the handle of @GirlsOnTopsTees. And you can find them on their Etsy page too. But they are a t-shirt company celebrating female voices in films, which can range from directors to actresses. And the whole thing, this was done well before the Me Too movement started coming into play. So this was well before any of the harassment claims came forward.
Yeah.
But it was founded by Louisa Maycock, Daniela Vericanidi, apologies if I got your name wrong, and Jake Cunningham. And they got the idea after watching Mike Mills' 20th Century Women. So a character in the film was wearing a Talking Heads t-shirt. And after seeing this, they started batting around some ideas saying how cool it would be if women in films were treated like rock stars. Mm. So they debuted the t-shirts at the Bechdel Test Fest, which is a very famous test where they kind of measure just how much women are into a film.
Or like the Bechdel test.
Bechdel, yeah. Not Bechdel.
No,
that's
Bechdel.
That's a G-source.
So the test, it's not just how much women are in film. Yeah. It's how many times women are in film, whether there are two women in the film who are having a conversation that is not about a man. That's how they weigh it up. If it's two women have a conversation that just is about them and their lives and not about a man, that's how the whole Bechdel test works.
Yeah. Well, they introduced their t-shirt and their first tee bore the name of Sally Potter. So Sally Potter directed Orlando, starring Tilda Swinton, and Ginger and Rose, starring Elle Fanning. So they sold a few couple of t-shirts, very good, but then people started noticing the t-shirt on Twitter. So people got in touch with them saying, oh, well, are you going to be doing this name? Are you going to be doing any more t-shirts? So they decided, well, if we're getting the response, let's start bringing out some more t-shirts. So more names started appearing. People like Annette Bening, Isabel Huppert, Laura Dern, Lynn Ramsey, Sigourney Weaver, Jamie Lee Curtis. And celebs started wearing them too. So there's been pictures of Greta Gerwig in an Agnes Varda t-shirt and Rooney Mara wearing a Lynn Ramsey t-shirt. And I today am wearing Greta Gerwig, but it's a special edition, which was a collaboration with a film publication called Little White Lies. It's absolutely gorgeous. I will post a photo. Actually,
it will be on our...
It will be on skip to the old...
End.
Yeah, mate. I've only been in it for 18 months.
Don't, because I really wanted to say skip to the recommend, and my brain was going, no, try again. Try again even more. And I own a couple of t-shirts now, and the reason why I do love this t-shirt, A, the quality is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And B, it looks pretty fucking cool.
It does, it's sweet.
When you're wearing a woman's name in cinema or in the film industry, and there's some sort of empowerment about it. I went to a gin festival not too long ago in Nottingham, and I was purchasing myself a bottle of gin. I don't have problems, I just really like the gin.
Wow.
And the lady who served me, she was like, oh my God, I love your t-shirt. And she started talking about how she met Sigourney Weaver in a toilet.
What?
I know. And she was like, I really need to see where you got this t-shirt from. So I told her, I'm hoping she's bought them a few t-shirts. But there is something really cool about wearing a woman's name on a t-shirt. It's just very simplistic, but that's all the message needs to be.
Yeah. Women empowering women.
Yes.
I want to see it.
I want to see someone with Poochie across their chest and some flowers and stuff. That would be good.
One day, son, one day.
It won't be long. I just want to say as well, I haven't been looking at your boobs for the last 5 minutes.
I have been staring them straight on. I'm looking at the Greta Gerwig and the rose petals and stuff.
I'm just
beautiful
trying
shirt.
To think of a good excuse in 2 weeks when she's not wearing a t-shirt that says that. I'll come up with something.
But yeah, so I thought I'd bring a bit of fashion to the table, guys.
Wow. Excellent, excellent shout. Marky Mark, what have we got?
It's a sock company.
So
you're joking.
Of course I'm. Why would I? Remember when I came in and I bought a Mondo book for you all? And
I did.
I saw a lot of people on social media going out and buying it.
Great book.
Printed in Blood, who are a publisher, have come up with a new art book, and it's to celebrate the 35th anniversary of The Thing. So it's a hardback book of 375 pages, which is available on Forbidden Planet. The only way I can sell it is to bring it with me.
Oh my good God!
That's so even bigger than the fucking Mondo
one.
It
is. It's
Christ.
A big thing. But every single artist is different. So there's 375 different designs for my favourite films. So there's everything. A lot of the artists are well known. So they're good comic book artists. So you've got people like Tim Branstreet, Joe and Doe, Dave Dorman. But a lot of them as well are British.
No.
Help me.
Juan Doe, not Joe and Doe. It's clearly Juan. I'm reading the back of the book that he's holding up.
But these are iconic.
Joanne.
Is this my first mispronunciation?
And we've No, because you've mispronounced mispronunciation twice.
Okay. Fair enough. But there's some good British artists as well. They did a recent signing in London, which I couldn't get to, and they held them all there. But I'll do the usual. I'll pass it round.
Yeah. Thank you.
But it's really, for the listeners out there that can't see it, it's a really well-made book. And all the kind of quality of the prints is fantastic. And every single one is completely different. But the book is so thick and hard. It's one of those ones that you want on your coffee book table. It really is. It's so, so good. It's got a foreword by Eli Roth. So Eli Roth has got involved and done a little bit of talk. John Carpenter's been contributing to it. So it's a really good investment. It does cost about £30. But when you look at the size of it and think you'd pay, I don't know, fiver for a good print, you're getting 375 of them. And it's a big bloody book. It's bigger than, is it A4? I think the pages are massive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not quite A4, but it's spectacular. It's one of those where you're looking through it and thinking, I want that as a poster, I want that as a poster, I want that as a poster.
When I was looking through it, I was thinking tattoo ideas.
Yes.
There's beautiful designs.
Wow. I want to get Dad's face tattooed on my face.
That would be incredible. But every single one is very well done. It's an investment. If you love the film, you've got to own the book. And it was just great seeing how many of you invested in the Mondo one. So if you are interested, check it out. There's a section on Amazon as well you can get it from, and it's worth every single penny, and you're never going to get bored because there's 375 designs.
Yeah.
It's not like you watch 20 and go, oh, I'll go back to them.
Yeah.
I haven't got through it all. I've owned it for about 2 months.
It's beautiful.
It's
Spend
gorgeous.
Some money, get a good coffee book table. That and Mondo together, brilliant.
Mm.
Yeah.
What I love about it, each page is different from the next.
Indeed.
It is.
Yeah. If you don't own a coffee table, buy one just to put that book on it.
That's
from
IKEA.
Yay!
Or Habitat. Does Habitat still exist?
I think
they're
gone.
Yes, they do. No, they're still kicking around.
Habitat's flat, but yeah.
Okay.
So, Ben, what have you got to finish the icing on the cake of this week's recommendations?
I'm going with a comic book series.
Oh!
Wow!
And it's called East of West, and it's a dystopian sci-fi western from Image Comics, who are the best comic book house going. It's written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Nick Dragotta. And the story starts in 2064 with an America that's been divided into seven nations on the verge of all-out war, dealing with a prophecy foretelling the end of the world at the hands of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. One of the horsemen, Death, has abandoned his allies because he falls in love with this Chinese fierce warrior with whom he has a son. The other horsemen then turn on Death and lead him to believe that his wife and son have been killed, when in fact they've both been kind of spirited away. He then sets out on this bloody mission of vengeance whilst attempting to prevent the coming apocalypse. It's the very definition of epic, with this sprawling narrative and dozens of fully realized and engaging characters on both sides of the apocalypse. The writing is really dense and witty and full of great turns of phrase, and the art is striking and fluid, and it has a strong manga feel, actually. Even though it's an American book, it feels like manga. And it's one of those rare comic books these days where the writing and the art are as strong as one another. Usually you get one, it leans one way or the other. So it's rare to find. And to give you an idea of what it's like, it feels like a cross between Preacher, if you've read the comics of that or seen the show, mixed with a bit of Firefly.
Ooh, I'm sold.
Thrown in with maybe a little bit of Blade Runner and with something like a Clint Eastwood cowboy movie, because Death in this particular book, he plays that kind of no-nonsense cowboy who shoots first and asks questions never, frankly. It's been running since 2013. There have been 30-odd issues. The first 34 are available in collected editions. You can get the first 7 collected editions now. The 8th edition comes out in August, I believe. If you're a fan of Western sci-fi, dystopian futures, or just damn good comics, you owe it to yourself to buy and read East of West. Because
cool.
It's fantastic.
There's some recommendations for you.
Yeah.
Little story for you. Yesterday, I went back to my parents' house for the first time in a long, long time.
Yep.
And they were like, you need to go into the attic and clear some stuff out. So I went in and found my old comic book collection
when
I was growing up as a kid. And my mom was like, do you want me to throw them away or do you want to keep them? And I was like, I honestly can't remember what I got. So I lift up this tin and they were all pristine. My dad's really good at keeping my stuff nice and safe for me when my mom wants to bin everything. I lifted up the lid and I had the very first issue of X-Files, the very first issue of Simpsons comics, of Bartman.
I had those from Bongo
Bartman,
Comics.
Which was unbelievable. I had the very first Ren and Stimpy, the Powdered Toast Man.
Yeah, oh, I had that as well.
Yes,
Powdered Toast Man.
I had
Man.
Ren and, all of the Ren
Did
and Stimpy.
Did you have
Stimpies.
The Beavis and Butthead ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had Duckman.
Yeah!
Oh my
Duckman!
God.
Which was incredible.
I used to love
And I had
Duckman.
Them all pristine. So I picked up the first one, which was the Ren and Stimpy first ever variant edition. I went on eBay in front of my mum and went, I'll just have a look.
Yeah.
One, and I went to the listings, to the sold items, sold yesterday for $676.
Fucking hell.
So me and my dad sat there going, right, you've got this one. He was telling me. We worked out I had about £13,000 worth in this stash.
Piss off. £13,000.
£1,300.
Right, okay. Okay.
Sorry, £1,300 worth of comics in this little stash alone.
Yeah.
Because I had the Bartman, I had Krusty, had his own range. Yeah. It was amazing.
And the thing is, do you keep them because they're so great as a nostalgia piece, or do you sell them and just cash in the bunts? What do you do?
I said to them, I said, leave them here because I don't need the money right now. Mm. And then my car blew up. But no, I don't need the money right now. And it was stuff I forgot about. And it'd be something that I can one day hopefully give to a kid or sell in years when it won't be worth anything.
I love how you said a kid. Not your kid, just a kid. Just some kid who walks by your house. Hey,
temptation.
Kid, do you want some Beavis and Butthead comics? Never heard of them.
Well, you've got to use comics now because asking to see your puppy doesn't work anymore. It's too common. So you've got to say, do you want to come back and see my comics?
Yeah, you can't ask them into the back of your van with some Haribo anymore.
No, it's got to be. I've got the issue one of Beavis and Butthead.
It's passé now, that.
But one day we'll have a look at them because it's fucking awesome revisiting them all. And I was like, my mum was like, you used to spend all your pocket money. I'm like, now you know why. £1,300 here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, shit. I want to see your collection.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We're going to Shrewsbury tomorrow because I want to see them comics.
It's awesome.
I genuinely didn't think that anybody else had heard of Duckman apart from me. I used to watch the cartoons all the time.
Duckman was amazing.
Yes.
And the character of Duckman was played by Jason Alexander, George from Seinfeld.
Knock me down. That's it. Knock me down.
Really dark. Really dark. But it was so good. I couldn't believe as well, because I had all the backboards for them. I used to pay like 10p back in the 90s, so everything was pristine. The issue one of Bartman has this hologram where he's fallen into this acid, and it's like that silver shiny you get in Panini stickers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was mint. And I was like, I can't believe this is so good. It was like a little treasure chest.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
In 95 episodes, this is the best thing you've ever said on this podcast. It's the only thing I've fully listened to, I think. But I mean, I want more
of this.
Took a while.
Congratulations.
So we'll go to my parents' house one day, and my mum will make us some cake.
Tomorrow.
And we'll have that. And if you suddenly get loads of money and I can't find them, I know who you are. So yeah, recommendations. Anything come through on social media that beats my comic books?
No. We've had some tremendous responses, but
they're
not that
good.
I've got
to say this.
Sorry,
Ben. Go on. I also had The Resurrection and The Death of Superman still sealed in the black and white cellophane bags, and I can't believe...
So first editions are when he gets beat by Doomsday.
Yes. Black original white set. I never opened them. My mum and dad have got them in these little seals. They're crystal clear. Like, they're perfect.
I've known you a long time, bro. We're good friends. I never knew you were a comic book nerd back in the day.
It's mental.
I love this.
All my pocket money went on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'll bring them back and we'll look at them.
That's amazing. Because I've got some like sealed Batman first editions.
Yeah.
Like the Killing Joke and stuff.
Nice.
Fucking hell.
I'm really sorry to intervene, but are you guys having a nerdgasm here?
Big time.
Because I need to grab a mop. This floor is sopping wet.
Even year one still sealed. It's amazing.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So what have our good friends on social media got? Forget the comics for now.
So on Facebook, Emily Mecker has said, not that I'm suggesting listening to another podcast, but the soundtrack show on the How Stuff Works network did a 3-episode deep dive into Jaws.
Oh, I'm sold.
And apparently their most recent episode was on the music of Super Mario Brothers, which is quite different.
That's cool.
It's all right.
But yeah, I'm down with that. I know, Gemma, you'll be all over that.
I'm knee deep in it. Thigh deep.
On Instagram, Feng Shuing has said, Agretsuko on Netflix. It's an anime about a red panda called Retsuko who is single, 25 years old, and works in the accounting department of a Japanese corporation. She escapes from the pressures of her crappy job and mean boss by singing aggressive death metal nightly at a karaoke bar. Apparently it's like Hello Kitty did a satirical version of Ally McBeal, but without the shitty music.
I've added that to my list as we speak.
I didn't know about it.
An anime about a panda who sings death metal.
I'm all for it.
Count me the fuck in.
Cemetery Piss on the soundtrack.
Or hopefully Piss Grave.
That would be unbelievable.
On Twitter, Andrew Nicholson at King Grimlock has said, got a Nintendo Switch with Zelda Breath of the Wild for my birthday. As a family man, it's a great console to pick up and down with my busy lifestyle. Zelda is easily the most immersive game I've played in years. Marky Mark, have you still got your Switch?
I have.
I thought you flogged it. Or were you thinking of flogging it?
I was going to flog it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I loved it. Never. But when I did play it and had the time, Zelda was unbelievable. And I got lost in it for about a week. And it is incredible. And if Nintendo are listening, send us them. Because we are very busy. We have lifestyles where we want to take our games with us.
Well, me and Ben
too. It would be awesome. Yeah, I want to have one. I want another one. But yeah, that would be awesome.
Do you play it more than you play your mini SNES?
Oh my God. That's a dust collector.
How many months were we waiting and praying for our mini SNESes to finally turn up? And I played mine literally twice.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's that. It was a really nice fort, and then I was like, oh, Donkey Kong Country. Fuck this, Netflix.
Yeah.
It was like, that's
all of the games on this, there are better versions on more modern machines, so why am I playing this?
Oh, I grew up with Zelda 2.
Can I have my mini snares? No, I'm lying.
You're good.
Again on Twitter, Katie at Out of Time has said, I'm just finishing The Looming Tower on Amazon Prime. It's very good, she says. Have either of you watched The Looming Tower?
No, I've heard about it.
Yeah, so I think it's just finished on Amazon Prime. I think there are 10 episodes, so I'm going to binge it. It stars Jeff Daniels, and it's about the events leading up to 9/11. It's based on a book by Lawrence Wright, and I've read the book, and the book is great. So I really want to see the series.
Interesting.
On Facebook, Martin Streeter said, I went to see Bill Bailey's latest tour called Larks in Transit. His balance of surreal stand-up and incredible musical talent makes him absolutely captivating and hilarious to watch. The fact that he threw in some Spaced and Black Book references was the icing on an incredibly satisfying cake.
Yay, Black Book!
He's so talented, that guy. He's such a good musician, and he's funny.
Yeah.
I love him.
I've never seen a Bill Bailey show live. I've seen a few of his live shows on tape, actually, back in the day. I did meet him live once at a Mastodon gig.
Wow.
Yeah, he was at their gig at Brixton Academy a few years back. Have either of you ever been to see him live?
No, I haven't.
I want to. And I believe he did play in our hometown, so I'm frustrated that we didn't go.
Oh shit.
We'll go again.
Yeah. We'll get on that.
If you're listening, vote.
Vote.
On Instagram, Charlotte, a.k.a. Mosley Shores, has said, I love dogs. The voice acting is superb and the stop motion is so beautiful. The story is both a bit mad and touching with a fantastically dry humour. I've not seen it yet. Pooj, have you seen it?
Loved it. It's in my top three of this year.
Really?
It's incredible. Wow. It really is amazing. It's just jaw-dropping from the very first. The music is so dominating, but the voice work, especially Bryan Cranston, is second to none.
Mark?
I saw it at the cinema. Yeah. I loved it. It's probably in my films of the year because everything else is everything that we've done. Yeah. But honestly, everything that Gemma said, it's so, so good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of lukewarm on Wes Anderson. I like some of his stuff, but some of it's a bit too twee.
I think you'll hate it.
Yeah, I think I'll hate it. So I'm just going to avoid it.
Should we score it now?
On Twitter, Brian at Boba Fett ate my TV. He said he watched The Resurrection of Jake the Snake over the weekend. As someone who has three family members who either have battled or are currently battling alcohol problems, it was very emotional and heart-wrenching. It really is.
It's you need to be in the right place at the right time to watch that. Don't think it's a documentary about wrestling. You're going to lose your will to live and soul. It's hard.
Yeah, you know, what was the documentary that he was in years back with Mankind?
Beyond the Mat.
Yeah, Beyond the Mat. I thought that was tough.
That was tough to watch. Yeah.
But this Resurrection of Jake the Snake is really bad. And just a little tidbit to throw out there. We talked on the last episode about our 10-year-old kid, Nicholas, won the tag team belts at WrestleMania. Nicholas, this 10-year-old, has won more WWF/WWE belts than Jake the Snake Roberts ever did. If you're a wrestling fan, that should make you ashamed and sad.
And sick.
I'll just move on.
Because he's one of the greats and Nicholas is a fucking infant.
Yes.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Kevin Horton on Facebook has said, I'm loving Brockmire on Fox. Hank Azaria is always good value and the script is sharp and makes me laugh out loud. Have either of you watched Brockmire?
I haven't.
I haven't watched anything, dude. Honestly.
Brockmire's really funny. So Hank Azaria, who's known most commonly as being the voice of people like Mo and Apu in The Simpsons, he plays a guy called Brockmire who is a baseball commentator and he gets sacked from his job because his wife left him. He walked in on his wife shagging some dude in some kind of BSDM type scenario, and he ends up getting drunk live when he's doing a baseball broadcast and telling the world about what happened to him, and he gets sacked, but then it becomes a viral hit and it's about his comeback, and it's fucking hilarious. It's genuinely one of the funniest things I've seen in years.
Oh, wow. I'm down for that.
So yeah, watch Brockmire. On Instagram, Nate, aka OA5599, has said the comic series Transmetropolitan. It's the story of a perverse journalist trying to bring light to lies, corruption, and ridiculousness in a government. And it's been fitting for decades, but it's particularly prescient in the current political climate here in America, as he says. And I would agree that it's all over the world as well. Have you ever read Transmetropolitan? I'm guessing you haven't.
Of course I haven't.
Yeah.
No.
It's fantastic. It's one of my all-time favourites. I think I would probably argue it's my second favourite comic series of all time. It's written by Warren Ellis, who's one of the greats, and it's drawn by my favourite artist of all time, Derek Robertson.
Oh.
So I'm with you, Nate. Transmetropolitan.
Wow. Some good recommendations,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Get on that. Finally on Twitter, Chris Hannon at HannonCM1978 said, I've watched Lost in Space with my 9-year-old daughter. She really enjoyed it, and her review was, they have a lot of problems to deal with. Which is true.
She summed it up perfectly.
Have you watched Lost in Space on Netflix?
I've got two episodes to go.
Yeah?
That's what I'm... Cause you keep asking me if I'm watching stuff. That's what I'm watching and I don't watch anything else.
How about you, Pooch? Have you watched it yet?
No, I've been watching the Defiant ones recently, but not Lost in Space.
I watched the whole thing. I did it in one day. It didn't do a lot for me to begin with, but by the end of it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mark, you say you've got two episodes left?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah, I really dug the finale. I thought the finale was great, so...
They've invested a lot of money in it. It looks great.
It does, doesn't it?
Really good.
Great effects.
Oh, super duper.
Yeah, some good recommendations there. Yeah.
So keep your recommendations coming. You can get us by all the usual channels. You can get us on our Twitter at STTEpodcast or on facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or via email at podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I've had a hell of a lot of fun.
So much better than the last episode.
Well,
I know they're all great, but you can sometimes feel that one's better than the other. And today I've left feeling like this was a bloody good one.
Mm. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And then our listeners will say, no, shite, you're wrong.
Yes, fuck you all.
But yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next one. But before we talk about the next one, a little Poochie here.
Hello.
Apparently you've got a little side project going.
Yeah.
Which you didn't clear with me and Mark.
No. I feel so rebellious.
Didn't clear it through HR.
No, I don't know what we should do about this now, because it's just happening again and again.
Am I on
holiday,
my ass?
Oh, I'm getting married. Oh, I've got another project.
Yeah. it's just a disregard for the rules.
Yeah.
Constantly. You know what I mean?
So reckless. What am I going to do next?
I didn't agree with her allowing, you know, dyeing her hair red.
No. And what you've got to remember is you came in on episode 50.
I did.
So maybe we change, was it, you know, episode 100, we bring someone else in.
Oh.
Every 50 episodes, we replace one of the main people.
Sounds good,
that's
yeah.
so sad. Yeah.
I've got another five.
I've got a mate called Dave. He'll be all right.
There you go.
He doesn't watch movies, but he'll be fine. Yeah.
Still be better than Gemma.
Brutal.
Anyway, back to you.
Tell us about your side project.
It's not side project, mate. It's a main project now.
So what I've done is I've created a little side project called Reimagined. You can find me at Twitter at ReimaginedUK. And I've just curated a playlist for films that I absolutely love through the medium of Spotify.
Wow, that's Spotify. $9.99 a month, which would be great if you paid it for me, because I'm skint.
Thank you, Mark. That's true. I am skint.
And the response has been great. I've seen you on Twitter. Yeah. We put you over and put it on to our 50,000 people. But yeah, I've seen a lot of people go in, I love it, Jem. Love what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's really nice. So thank you very much for everybody who's listened.
I still don't approve, but yeah.
And listen to the new episode of Mark and Me with Jessica Hines. Done.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
There you go.
Little plug. Bloody
plug,
yeah.
What's on the next episode, which is more important than any other side project?
Correct. Well, it's my topic choice, isn't it? We're going to do our top three cult movies, those movies that didn't really hit at the box office, but since then, they've gone to have a life in the home video, DVD, Betamax, whatever market, illegal download market, whatever you like.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
I'm looking forward to that. And our main review is a big one. It's going to be Deadpool 2. All the old-time listeners will know Ben hated the first one.
Yeah.
So let's see if he hates the second one.
Yeah.
But to kind of level that out, our rewatch for the next episode is going to be Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I just can't let go of the quiz. I had to bring the film through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And speaking of quizzes, we're going to have a brand new one next time round, which we've definitely come up with and definitely have a name for.
100%.
We're just not going to say it now.
Yes. We're also going to be whipping our... things out to masturbate.
Well, you are.
Yeah, we're just gonna
stick to the rules, mate. Yeah.
Yes, and I can't remember who we're masturbating.
Scarlett Johansson.
Bloody hell,
yeah,
I should remember
that. You are
that.
Gonna be masturbating.
Yes. Something I spent many years of doing. But yes, we will actually be doing it in public. And as always, you'll see it on Twitter, the picture, reply. We love hearing for the topic and masturbate who you would choose as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've mentioned all of our social media things, but get us on skiptotheend.co.uk as well. All of our links are on there. All of our old topics and episodes and reviews, etc. Get involved. I've had a lot of fun, you guys.
Yes.
But I'm tired.
Yes.
It's bedtime now.
Okay.
So we'll see you in 2 weeks.